I think we're ready to begin. Good afternoon. We're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance, brought to us by Bridget Golgotha.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening, Commissioners. I'd like to take the roll call.
Please do that.
Commissioner Hurd?
Present.
Commissioner Hartwig?
Present.
Commissioner Main?
Present.
Commissioner Montgomery?
Present.
Commissioner Castillo?
Present.
And Commissioner Nagraj?
He will be here.
Okay, thank you.
Wait for
okay. Commissioner Pitts. Thank
Present.
You.
Okay. Everybody's accounted for, not necessarily here, but we're here. Approval of the minutes. Everybody's had a chance to look at it?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded.
And note that's the approval of minutes from April 9, 2012 and April 22, 2012.
2 months. I mean, 2 meetings.
No, we could do it.
We're mentioning both of them, right?
Yep.
Your motion?
Yes.
So both.
Motion for both to be approved April 9th, April 22nd.
Wonderful. Any comments, discussion on April 9th and April 22nd? Hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Any abstentions? Hearing none, is unanimously approved. Okay, any modifications to the agenda? Hearing none, I will modify the agenda. Before we start with new business, we're going to move up this time frame for recognizing people wishing to speak to the commissioners. Let's see how many cards we have here. Okay, we can handle that. Mm-hmm. Reports from legal counsel.
There are no final decisions made.
Session, commissioners.
Sorry.
No final decisions made in the last meeting.
Right.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. I see one different, I think. Joe Sarabia. Well, I was trying to decipher that. It looked like it might have been the same. Okay.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My reason for being here today is I'm a new resident of Oakland. I purchased a property near one of your vacant properties at 2530 9th Avenue. And my first off, I'd like to commend the Oakland Housing Authority Police Department has been responsive to squatters that frequent the property. But the reason for addressing this afternoon is to find out the disposition of that property is my attempts to yield information both in making phone calls and looking at the website have not been very fruitful beyond the decision that was made in 2010. So trying to determine if there's a good place to go for that information, and since there was a public meeting, I thought I would start here.
Could you repeat the address?
It's 2530 9th Avenue.
2530?
The last I found about it was a decision in February 2010 to hold
that's
that
the 14-unit building?
Yes.
Yeah, you can call me in the morning.
Okay.
Or actually on Tuesday.
Oh, easy.
And staff will get you my number.
Oh, great.
Right.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
I was going to say that. Call Mr. Johnson in the morning. Do you have his number?
All right, I'll get that. Thank you very much.
Okay, I can give it to you from here. It's 874-1510.
Okay.
Okay, sure.
Tuesday. Thank you.
Okay. I guess Nancy Cross? You are next.
This is my third time, I believe, before the board, and I want to recall to you that I came here saying that I had received notice of winning in a lottery that was promised me a housing offer within 3 years, and it's now more likely, let's see, from 9 years at this time, and no explanation about it. And I was referred to your staff to reconstruct the record of what you had and what might be done in the circumstances. The staff provided me opportunity to sit before a computer and search Craigslist for something, and I didn't, it was unclear as just what you had of the record or what had been destroyed, and in the long run it turned out that my application originally had been destroyed because you could not produce a copy of it. And I had provided a second copy when I was told that the loss of the first one was due to a change of computers. But apparently that might have been a cover-up for a racist destruction in the original. And when I said I still want the offer of housing, they said, but we no longer have the moderate rehousing stock that we once had to provide you. Well, I thought, well, maybe you don't, but you still owe me the housing or something equivalent. If not financially, maybe it might be something a newer project, but the equivalent of what should have been done. And I saw your new housing go up, Merit Senior Housing, and I said, well, why don't I be eligible for something there since it's still to come? And I put in I was told that, well, you're not eligible by your staff. Well, I didn't see why I wasn't eligible, so I put in an application timely. I haven't heard from that. I'd like to know what the status is. The deadline for getting the application in was the 6th of January. I got it in 6th, and I have record of that, but I have heard no word. So I don't know whether you have notified people or notified only the people you want or rejected my application. I'd like to be informed of the status of the application there and also the status of giving me my due. Just to say, well, we don't have that program anymore and we don't have the records anymore, and I produced the records, a second set, and I still could produce a third set if that was relevant, but I submitted to a hearing. I was quizzed by Ms. Rice and Ms. Hassan in oral back and forth. They never questioned my representations of facts of what happened, and I asked for a record of what they had decided or concluded about that, and I was told when I asked for records...
Speaker's time is up.
Go to the Mr. Johnson, not to go to him rather than the board. But I understand that he informed them not to provide the reactions to my presentation, even though they identified various faults of the agency for that very reason. Now, could you move things so that we conclude this? Either you're rejecting my importuning to try to settle this in a reasonable way to have substitute housing, or do we have to go to damage suits and things like that? I'd like to know where I stand on the Merit Senior Housing application or when I will be notified of that.
Thank you, Ms. Cross. You have not been agendized for this meeting that we have here, except for to speak on public comment, and that doesn't give us a chance to respond to that, except for to refer you to Mr. Executive Director Johnson, and I can give you his number so you can call him and talk to him, and then he can give you the appropriate answers you might need or the next steps you might need to take in order to address it.
I wonder if he could, if you could direct him to give me a written response to this, because the last time you referred me to him, I was defeated in
We'll provide you something in writing, and I would like you, if you want to find out about the lottery for Harrison Street Senior that was conducted, you need to contact Christian Church Homes, with whom you applied. It wasn't with the Housing Authority. If you'd like the contact information, we'll put that in the letter as well.
Well, you can put that down, but you're contracted with that Affordable Housing Associates, and Oakland Housing Authority is responsible for what it contracts out.
Well, actually, we're partnered with them. Let me clarify that for you. We're not contracted by them. They are managing it.
They're managing. That's managing. Yes. You contracted with them to manage it, but you are still responsible. The state has tried to send prisoners out and say, well, if they don't give you constitutional rights, we're not responsible. That place in Alabama is. But the courts have decided that the people that contract out are the responsible public agency.
He's
and
going
not the
to
people,
give you the response.
The managers.
And he said he's going to put it in writing.
Well, you can try that, but I'm saying that delegation is not sufficient if you don't have a fair process and you haven't contracted.
And he will give you the process.
Will you find out the status of my application, please? That would be one of the things to be included. Also,
we'll tell you where you can learn it, and I'll give you the final letter related to your case so that you can take your next steps.
And I'd like to have an answer of the public records request that was the records that in-house that I understand that you told staff not to disclose to me because it would be incriminating of what you have done. And I'd like an answer on the public records request, please, too.
That's to him.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Now we have, it looks like a group. I think. Yes. Speaking on item number 7, unless you want to wait till item 7 comes up, but you can speak on it now. That would be Daniel McGill, Chaz Bell, Diane Somerville, and Barbara.
Barbara Lopez. Hi, I'm Daniel McGill. I'm a building and grounds worker. I'm also a member of the bargaining team for SEIU 1021. And we've been at bargaining for almost 2 years now. Well, over the last year, we have made a lot of progress, and now we're at the end. And what we're trying to do is get equity for all of our members in our bargaining unit, and we're being held back by equity for all. This contract could be ended if you would hear what our members have to say and give the management team a leeway to give us some equity for all of our members, as well as they had done with 29, so that we can all end this contract and move on, because we will be back at it in 6 more months. All we need is equity for all, and as soon as we can do that, this contract will be over. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Chaz Bell. I'm a housing assistance representative and a member of the bargaining team for SEIU. In addition to the information request we've made across the table, I've made a public information request for wages per employee per pay period since January 1st of 2010. It's not exotic information. It's extremely basic. I wanted simply to know who got paid what and when. And while the Public Information Act gives the authority 10 days to respond to me, it took nearly a month to get a flat no. The information doesn't exist, which is extremely hard to believe. But even if it didn't exist, the Public Information Act places several responsibilities on the Housing Authority with regard to my request. It simply says that the authority is to assist the member of the public to identify records that are responsive to the request. Describe the information technology and physical location in which the records exist. And provide suggestions for overcoming any practical basis for denying access to the records. The 10 days wasn't met. Assisting the member wasn't met. Describing the IT wasn't met. Providing suggestions wasn't met. Quite simply, your management team is withholding information that is clearly public. If you could request of them to provide that information to the bargaining team through my Public Information Act, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Good evening, Commissioners. Barbara Lopez. I know my handwriting. I wanted to just say, yeah, I know. I probably would struggle reading it too. I wanted to just say that, as promised, we're here to give you a bargaining update as much as we possibly can within the guidelines of the law. But because I know that you meet frequently with the management team, we wanted to make sure you get the worker perspective. The first thing I'm going to do is also just ask everybody who works for the Oakland Housing Authority to just stand up. And I think this is very important, so you see the faces of the folks that make sure this agency runs. And we're talking about folks who are buildings and grounds workers. Oh, you can keep on standing, actually, so they see you. To HARs, to the property managers, we represent a wide range of people, about 104 people who work for the Oakland Housing Authority. And as Daniel said, we're so close to TAing. We're so close. So close, there's only one item left on the agenda. So we've made tons of progress in the last year. And I want to commend the bargaining team. They've definitely shifted and changed, and we've noticed that. And we definitely have been very open to negotiating and working through projects. But we have this last proposal left, and it's equity. Now, I just want to go over it real quickly. The proposal is limiting to a set number of classes. Our issue is that in past contracts, we've had multiple classes not get equity. So it's creating this weird dynamic where a constant group of classes are getting equity and another group of classes are falling behind, which is why we want to keep our bargaining unit unified and ask for equity in a way that's equal to all our workforce. We understand some folks are 15, some are 10, and some are 5. But the reality is almost all of our workforce is way below market. And that's something we'd like to address in a way that people feel that we're addressing all of their issues. One thing I wanted to note, I'm really happy that our sister union, Local 29, TA'd, and that they got equity. And I just want to acknowledge that they got equity, not just for 15% above, below market, no one's above, below market, but also for people who were 10% and even 5% away from market. So our sister union, again, we're happy that TA'd, got equity for a wide range of classes at different salary levels. And not just for folks who had job changes, for folks who had no job changes or changes to their class status. So I just want to put it out there that we saw this practice happen at another table, and we just want the same and similar treatment. I got to tell you, one thing about bargaining with SEIU 1021 at Oakland Housing Authority is sometimes we felt a little bit like your unwanted stepchild. And I really want to change and shift that dynamic with the Oakland Housing Authority. I think that at the end of the day, our workers just want to feel respected and want to have dignity. They're here for a reason. They love what they do. Most of our folks live in Oakland, are part of the community. They feel very strongly about their work here. And at the end of the day, that's what we want. We see all these big ticket items, the agenda, $8 million there, $200,000 there. We just want that investment, and we see it happening, but we need that investment in our workforce. So what I'm asking you to do when you have your private session, which I understand it's bargaining, it can't be public, just really take this to heart and take this to consideration. We have one item left, and that's it. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Barbara Lopez. Yes. I got the Barbara part right. Diane Somerville? She's not speaking?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. Just to our bargaining unit and to the workers, all of our workers, I want you to know that it is the position of this commission that we sincerely appreciate all the work you do. We love our Oakland Housing Authority workers, because you are the ones who's making this thing happen, okay? Not just the union ones, even the ones that are not signatory, okay? We respect you, we appreciate what you do, and we would like to give you everything that you want, but we can't, okay? We haven't done that for all the unions, and if we did that for you, then we'd have to start doing that for everybody else that we didn't do it for, and that put us in a difficult position. One of the things why we do bargaining is because we try to figure out how much that we can spend and budget ourselves for that within HUD's allowance. And at the same time, we have to say, okay, if we're going to spend this much for health care, then we can't spend this much for wages. And there's a juggling act that goes on, and that's why we call it bargaining. So you can figure out what you want, where you want to put the money that we have that we can spend. Okay? Once that's done, then we move forward. I know you guys want to move forward. We'd love to get you, especially your back pay, okay, because I know you're still waiting for some of that. And we'd like for you to work it out and bargain it. We hear you. We love you. Okay? We'd love to give you all that you want. We're not going to be able to do that, I'm sure, but we want you to at least know that we respect you and appreciate you. Okay? No, there's no more. She said she didn't want to speak. We're done. That was just my comment at the end. Okay, having done that, let's move on to new business.
Good evening, commissioners. New business. The first item of agenda is a consideration of a resolution approving the fiscal year 2013 budget for the Oakland Housing Authority. This, we have a short presentation. This went to a committee. It's not so short. I should correct the record. But we have a PowerPoint presentation to walk you through some of the significant changes. We have met with the budget committee and for a lot of hours this year. I think it's one of the best sessions that we get to do with board members, and I'd encourage every board member to sit through a budget committee year because you just get to see how the agency really operates, and I think it's really informative. This year is very much a flat budget. When we get to the final slide, you'll see that we are actually pulling from reserves to finish some of our development projects, which is what that money was obligated for. But we are as flat as we can be because HUD's funding has diminished and we are not throwing off any reserves like we used to do in the past. Having said that, we've got presentations by Patricia Eisen on her departments, then by Janet Rice on her departments, followed up by Tony Ma, who's going to wrap the whole thing up, including a final presentation on the proposed dashboard, which I'd like to hand out. I think it's on your desk with a PowerPoint. The PowerPoint on the dashboard was not included in your packets because we were only finishing it this afternoon. Actually, the PowerPoint was ready, but the dashboard was still getting formatted and looking a little better than what it was.
Ink was good, right?
Yeah, we worked till the last minute. I'll turn it over to Patricia Eisen.
Good evening, Commissioners. As noted, Patricia Eisen, Deputy Executive Director for Property Operations. If you'll note by the initial slide, you'll see the organizational chart for the Office of Property Operations, and it basically illustrates the final phase of a six-year journey to establishing the part of the agency that is in charge of all the property owned, managed, or contracted by the Housing Authority. We recently established in the last 12 months three distinct departments: the Department of Property Management, was called the Office of Property Operations, the Department of Property Operations. We recently renamed it to settle, if you will, and establish property operations to its function, and that's the management of our property to keep it safe, affordable, decent, in good repair, and of high quality. We also established the Department of Asset Management, and that department is in charge of all the third-party sites. And lastly, as you'll remember, this earlier in 2011, we established the Department of Capital Improvements, and I'll go over very briefly each of the subunits within those three departments, beginning with asset management. And again, thank you. Asset management has four primary roles. You'll see them here. Essentially, they're our eyes and ears and our authority over our third-party management companies. They ensure quality control for not just our third-party companies, but also how we as an agency operate our management of our property that we own and or manage. If you look at the inventory on the next slide, you'll see the list of all of the sites that are underneath the current jurisdiction for asset management. Please note that under the designated senior sites, Palo Vista Gardens, which was recently completed and celebrated under ARRA, is still managed by the Property Management Department team, but you'll see that we'll be going out soon for a request for proposals for a third-party management company. On the next slide, when you look at the specific areas underneath the roles of asset management. It's primarily the physical performance of all of our properties to make sure that we're in line with not just HUD quality standards, but also the standards that we established as a housing authority based on your direction for the upkeep of our property. Of course, the financial performance to make sure that our assets are not just viable, but have sustainability to offer affordable housing for the upcoming decades. And then lastly, regulatory compliance and contract management. If you look on the list of goals and objectives for the next slide, you'll see that it's focused on those quantifiable and qualifiable portions of managing our property. We have established in property operations a focus on numerical performance standards to excite our team and our third-party companies to give the high standards of property management, and also on that quality piece so that we are and continue to be a high performer. Under quality control, we look at the basic aspects of property management, work orders, preparation for emergency and standard procedures, how the files and the finances are handled, and of course, our unit rehabs. So that's our asset management department. Going into our capital improvements department, it's what keeps us looking good for our management properties. We've reorganized that department. We have a director, an assistant director. We have three primary units of our staff team, the construction and inspection, rehab, and landscape team, some of which were some of the team members that just left us for the meeting. But if you notice on the org chart for capital improvements, there's a dotted line at the bottom to the force account projects. We put that there to note that as a business, we do offer a force account operations team from calling in at the hall, and that's part of the business we operate, but they are not FTEs. But we want to make sure that it's highlighted that that's a significant and strong portion of how we're able to ensure the quality of our sites. There are, on the next slide, our planned contracted projects. Under OPI, we've identified 8 sites that will receive attention by our capital improvements team for what we'll consider major rehabs, both exterior as well as interior to the property. And if you look at that list of properties, there's some that have come up on previous discussions in terms of need of repair.
I only count 7.
There are 2 more on the next slide.
That makes it 9.
That's 9.
What did I say?
8. Oh, there's 9.
Oh, my glasses might be dirty. On the next slide, for our planned force account projects, if you notice, we've identified 2 of our larger projects that we're going to take on for this year, 2558 35th Avenue and 94th Avenue. One of the notations on your slide here is that the 2010 capital fund was actually the last year that we could designate towards scattered site properties. However, just recently, the executive director managed to negotiate with HUD, and so the 2010 has now been block granted into our MTW funds. And in addition to that, we've received verbal approval to continue to use MTW funds on keeping our OPI projects in good repair, because it is meeting our MTW goal of sustaining affordable housing in the city of Oakland.
The goal is actually to develop affordable housing. Is that a good here? Yes.
Thank you.
So we want to have the record say the reason HUD has approved us for that is because OPI is developing affordable housing by restoring these units.
Okay, thank you. What he said. In terms of the goals for capital improvement, again, it's on quantifiable performance measures, making sure that the standard for turnaround time for our units is 25 work days, meeting HQS standards for our OPI and project-based properties, and also increasing the curb appeal and the motivation of our staff teams. Under landscape services, and our next slide, this is just to remind you of the fact that with curb appeal and with improving properties comes the landscape piece. And it includes not just our newer projects that we're doing landscaping, but also preserving the work that has been done under previous programs, either through HOPE 6, capital fund improvements, or our BEP projects. Moving on to the next slide, to property management. Divided into 3 central functions of administration, property management, and site and legal. Looking at the slide for our property management sites, you'll notice that the portfolio remains at 861 total units of public housing at our 3 largest properties, Lockwood, Palo Vista, and Peralta. And again, I'll note that Palo Vista will be making a transition to a third-party management if we're successful in our RFP for third-party management, and then go up under asset management.
And I just want to interject, even though I promise not to. to point out two things. If you notice, there was a shift of increase in units in asset management and a decrease in units in property management. That's a little bit of this shift, but most of that's due to asset management getting more units coming offline, like next door, like Lion Creek Crossing Phase 4 that they have to asset manage rather than manage. But that's definitely, that department has the growth in it for all the new units that are in the pipeline right now.
That's going to be one of our most exciting business systems, I imagine, as we move mm-hmm. forward, is what we're able to do with asset management under our affiliates and nonprofit organizations. And then in contract management services, ergo OPI management, we have the 1,554 total units. Please note, for those of you that weren't able to make our budget meeting, is that we're trying to name our communities so that they're easy to identify. We know that AMP 9 was often confusing on where it looked and where it sat. So if you look at the property map, which you'll see a little later in another presentation, we've named the AMPs to indicate what part of our glorious city they remain in. Looking at the property management organization on our next slide, one of the things I want to point out primary here is that each of the AMP teams essentially has the same organizational structure. There is a property administrator who supervises an assistant property administrator, in some cases two assistant property administrators, a maintenance superintendent, and then our maintenance grounds teams, which has pretty much an even complement of grounds workers and maintenance mechanics to maintain the property. The skilled trades, except at the public housing sites, are in our capital improvements division. Now going for the fun part, to our budget. One of the things that we attempted to do this year is to continue to improve the way that we calculate and budget the spending for each of our properties. Under public housing, we are doing MTW funding to meet the need of the properties. That results, if you notice, instead of a deficit as we had last year, a slight improvement in terms of the income at those properties. Similarly, under our contract management sites on the next slide, ergo our OPI sites, we had better data. And we've done some realigning with the establishment of the three departments, so we were able to budget for the upcoming year to zero. And are very hopeful with the goals that we set for performance-based budgeting that we will meet that guideline under budgeting.
And just one note about when leased housing budgets and when all of OPO budgets, they include the costs for all the indirect costs for the agency are included in these numbers. The police department, family and community partnerships, as well as their own indirect costs for that office. So by budgeting to zero, it means CAHI's paying for their share of those all those activities.
The goals, again, for our property management department under public housing is focusing on performance efficiencies quantifiably, and that includes the vacancy rate, which has had a dramatic improvement over the next year, and we hope to continue to do that this upcoming fiscal year, our rent collections, and our 5058 submissions. For our project-based Section 8 contract management goals, again, it's quantifiable. As you'll remember in previous conversations, we're still feeling the impact of disposition and the relocation of many of our OP tenants to take their voucher and move on. And the goals that you'll note on vacancy and leasing is based upon us trying to have a systematic leasing and vacancy term project for the next 12 months.
And so the first goal, what they're saying, that's an unadjusted vacancy rate. The total number of units that are offline getting rehabbed and re-rented.
And rehab to the new model unit. Mm-hmm. So they're not just basic flips. Yeah. We are making our property something that every family will be proud and honored to live in. And with that is basically the budget for a staff team that has worked as heroes to try to do a reorganization, serve clients through disposition, and move forward in terms of the quality of our production of vacancies and services to our sites. And if there are no questions, I'd like to introduce my colleague, Ms. Janice Rice.
Yeah, Jenna, if you could. And there will be time for questions when we finish as well.
You want her to hold off?
If you, it's up to you guys. I just want to, we did.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just hoping that you can. Hi, Ms. Janet. If you could just give me a simple definition of a forced account, please.
Oh, forced account? Forced account, and I would certainly defer to the chair or Commissioner Pitts or Mr. Johnson, but forced account is the relationship, the established memorandum of agreement that the Housing Authority has with the Trades Council that allows us to call needed skilled trades workers from the union hall for short-term specific projects. We pay them much like a contractor. They do the work needed for that particular project, and then they're released to go back to the hall. So it could be a day's worth of effort to a couple of weeks' worth of effort.
It's a HUD term that they invented because we're forcing construction without having to go through the bidding process by doing it ourselves through this mechanism.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
All right. Janet?
Thank you very much.
Any other hands? Yes. Ms. Hart.
Or from Ms. Eisen.
You just like to see me walk across the
It's just clarification. On the units that are completed in 7 days, what's our turnaround?
Say it one more time, please.
The units turn completed in 7 days.
They're talking about a routine vacancy turn when someone moves out, clean it up, replace the carpets, paint it, and release it. That's a short turn. The longer terms are when we do the comprehensive modernization, which we've got the kitchens, got the bathrooms, got all, and put everything back in. That's a long term. And those go into the adjusted vacancy factor, and that's what we're trying to improve on both of those. Generally, they put seven. Generally, the best kind of what other housing authorities measure for is 11 days, not seven. They're setting the goal high. I didn't oppose.
And it's probably a little bit unbalanced because we are still rehabbing major, so we'll have many more long-term rehabs than we will short-term, because basically when they move in and see the granite countertops, they don't want to leave. So.
And so we have a lot of flips. The interesting thing about a rehab, when you get in there, you never know how long it's going to be. Some are quick or some are not. So what they're trying to do is get the routines, even the major rehabs where we're doing a series of works, get that timed in through our portfolio so it's pretty quick. Sometimes we'll run into more systemic issues that the unit will be offline for a longer period of time. So we're kind of, for your perspective, we're looking at the average, and we're going to start putting the average so you'll know where we are in that in our dashboard.
Mm-hmm. Does that conclude property operations? Great, thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Any other questions, comments? Okay, Ms. Rice.
Good evening, Commissioners. Janet Rice, Deputy Executive Director. Presenting for the Office of Finance and Program Administration, we are the support arm of the organization that allows all of these things to continue to move forward in a progressive manner in relationship to our properties as well as services to our residents. The slide here shows the five departments, or the six departments that this department covers, family and community partnerships as well as finance, CAHI, our nonprofit affiliate, leased housing, our largest department, information technology, and contract compliance and general services. Total of 147 staff. First, our largest department, leased housing. We have 90 total staff in leased housing covering five major areas: eligibility, customer service, occupancy, housing quality, and special programs. We have the listing of the breakout of all the staffing here. We have a couple of major initiatives, or actually several major initiatives, that we're undertaking this year. The first thing was to consolidate our occupancy teams. Those are our largest two teams, and so we are now there under one of our managers there. We also took over the criminal history screening this year, so that's an effort that we worked very closely with OHAPD to move over to the leased housing department. And then finally, we are in the process of consolidating eligibility. So whereas we used to have two departments, both property operations as well as leased housing, performing this function, we've now consolidated that. We're in the process of fine-tuning that. So we anticipate that should be completed shortly. Next slide.
Which slide are you on, Jen? I think we're ahead. You're on the pie chart?
Right. So the budget overview next, we wanted to be responsive to some of the comments related to our committee members, and so we wanted to provide you here with an overview of the leased housing's budget. As you can see, the majority of the budget is comprised of our housing assistance payments, which is our private landlord subsidies. And then we have $7.4 million of allocated expenses, and that's basically other department support, and you'll see that later in our slides, as well as we have our second largest expense, which is staffing. Next. Another picture here, just to give you some percentages in terms of how the leased housing budget is broken out. 89% of the budget is the HAP payments, as well followed by 6% of the staffing, and then 4% for allocated expenses, which again are internal departments to Oakland Housing Authority. The next slide will show you a breakout of those specific categories. The allocated expenses are comprised of our local program that we have in partnership with the City of Oakland, the sponsor-based housing assistance program. We have family and community partnerships at $2.2 million, and then our central office cost center, which is approximately $2 million, and $1.7 million in police services. Next, you'll see we have just a breakout between our operating expenses for the leased housing department at $11 million and $156 million for our housing assistance payments. Next slide. Our next department is Family and Community Partnerships. This is the department that has a primary responsibility in our communities for servicing our residents. We have a FTE of 13 for this department right now. It's broken out primarily between our education, family self-sufficiency, and then workforce development. Family and Community Partnerships has a broad array of goals, but our goal is primarily to meet the needs of all of the variety of OHA clients that we have participating in our programs. We want to have a significant impact and build on best practices to not only address the whole person, but the whole family, and maintain synergy in family and community partnerships with all of the other programs and departments within the authority. Initiatives, we have many of those in FCP, primarily, as I spoke about earlier, broken down between economic development, workforce, education initiatives, as well as we have some civic engagement and some special things that we do just in support of our residents and what we do in the community. I'll break those program areas down. Again, employment and economic development. Each area covers a wide variety of activities, and so I've broken those down here for you so that you can see that they're very vast, the various areas that we touch within family and community partnerships. And when I say touch, it's not just the staffing there. We actually have about a little over a dozen contracts with other third-party providers that help us to administer these services. So we know that we are not experts in certain areas, and therefore we contract with folks in the community in order to help us fulfill our mission and our goals. Our education initiative, a major initiative within the authority, our partnership with the Oakland Unified School District. We do data collection. We've engaged in opening some technology centers and helping our residents to become computer literate. And we're just now starting to see some of the fruits of our labor in, around our education programming and solidify that for this next year. So we actually are starting to gather data so that we can start to identify some benchmarks and measurements, and that's our next step in that process. And we also recently solidified our memorandum of understanding for another two-year period with the Oakland Unified School District, so we're excited about that. Our life enrichment services, and these are things that help our community be more engaged with each other as well as with the authority, gives our youth exposure, helps them to be gainfully employed. It also, the things such as Holiday Splendor, it is carrying on many years of tradition. And also we're helping our residents learn nutrition and helping them to eat better and learn about how to take care of themselves in part of our wellness program. And we also have civic engagement and leadership. We do that through our resident advisory board, our neighborhood leadership institute. We now have parent ambassadors that really have come up through our neighborhood orientation workshops and then also our neighborhood leadership institute, and now are going on to really be what I call seeds in the community to help our residents come together to be advocates, but also just to be champions, not only for themselves, but their children. We've also now engaged in trying to have more of an emphasis around our fathers and our men's in the community, our men in the community. So we started with our men's club, and so we're trying to expand that and grow that under the leadership of our manager, Nicole Thompson. And finally, mentioning just to follow up on our sponsor-based HAP program with the city, that is going very well. We will be now, I believe it's our third year. I have Susan Shelton in the audience here who came also to be a representative on their behalf. We also do some program administration, so we do a lot of marketing and outreach. The team has been working on many ways to communicate to our residents. Our resident newsletter, Our Voice, is going very well as we've redesigned it, and so that's been very communicative out in the community. We're working now on various types of grants to pursue. So some of our efforts, we can partner with community representatives and hopefully bring in and leverage our dollars so that we now have the ability to raise some more money to help fund some of our programming. And then there's the interagency agreements, which is it's similar to contracting out, but it's more applicable to another government entity. So we've used Alameda County as one of our examples to enter into an interagency agreement in order to bring some programming to our residents and specifically to our resident youth. And then finally, I wanted to cover our 2013 budget and give you a breakout both via pie chart, but then also some individual numbers of how the FCP budget is broken out. As you can see, the majority of our expenses are for staffing, and those staff are there not only to provide case management and services to our residents, but also then to manage the contracts that we actually engage in, because again, the final outcome, the evaluations and benchmarks are things that the staff have to make sure are in place so that we can tell where our dollars are being spent and how effective we are. Again, I've just broken this out by percentages to give you a sense of how the money is spent. We have our biggest expense in terms of the program area is our employment development piece, which is at 34%, followed by our civic engagement activities, which is 19%. So, yep, and then youth programming is 28% for children. That's children and youth programming. So with that, I'll take any questions. If there are none, I will turn this over to our Director of Finance, Tony Ma.
I have just one question. I'm sorry, Janet. Just one question, Janet.
Okay.
With the pending budget cuts coming down from HUD, regarding the government grants, I think you indicated 239,164.
Right. The government grants that we're referencing here is our family self-sufficiency program. And for the most part, we have not seen a decline. In fact, they actually came out with two recent grant notices, and we were awarded two positions that you would be approving in the budget so that we would hire for those positions. Because again, those are, I think, critical to our serving our residents. It is the case management component and making sure that we are the bridge between our residents and those providers in the community that are providing services to meet their needs.
I also probably should interject one thing that Janet and I have agreed to be provide some technical assistance through our FSS to a neighboring housing authority because they are troubled and they needed it so that they can access the same money because their funding was in jeopardy. And I just wanted to make you aware of that.
Thank you.
We'll be doing that through this unit.
So we are serving in the role as a contract administrator for another housing authority's FSS program.
Yes.
Okay. All right, thank you, Jen.
I get it. It's a good gesture.
It's a good gesture. They're a good group, and I wanted to make sure as many people could benefit from this program as they could, even if they don't live in Oakland. So we had some spare time. It's not a huge burden, and it allows them, they wouldn't otherwise be able to apply.
Is it one of the, I'm sorry. Is it one of those agencies that allows us to port people easily, or is
it? No, it is not. It is actually one, I don't want to call them out, but there, you have to cross a bridge. And it's not the big one across the bridge.
Enough said.
It's a small agency.
Moving right along. Oh, yes. Ms. Montgomery.
Yeah, I was interested in the Parent Ambassador Program.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, where is that located? Is it on all properties, or is it just, is that something new, or is that some information about that?
Okay. So the Parent Ambassadors Program evolved out of the Neighborhood Leadership Institute, and parents specifying that they wanted to have a more active and participatory role at our schools. And so, in essence, it is sort of a subset of the Neighborhood Leadership Institute. And what happens is that those parents that have a focus on education, we have gone ahead and allowed them now to do some site-based programming with the 8 pilot schools that we've selected associated with our education initiative.
You have in the packet the 8 pilot schools, the pilot schools.
Mm-hmm.
Can I? Is that?
And we are actually going to have a presentation next month on all this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
And
okay.
Presented in hopefully in partnership with our 2 committee members, 3 committee members for the Education Committee and staff. I think we'll work on something in the next month that we can devote some time, because it's amazing. And I don't want to say anything more until they're in.
Okay. So we will.
No more questions? Oh, I see you thinking.
So, good evening. Tony Ma, Director of Finance. I'm here to, I guess, do the wrap. The one thing I want to point out is this year, like last year, is we have very tight fiscal constraints. So OHA staff and management have worked very hard to make sure that we match revenues and expenses. Essentially, we're budgeting to a zero budget. Kind of want to go over the assumptions with you. For public housing, we're assuming for rental income for 1,299 units, subsidy income at 75% of eligibility. We are also funding our public housing at Section 8 GO rents. And on the capital fund side, we are basically funding at about $2.7 million. Housing Choice Voucher, our baseline is at 12,687 vouchers, and we're assuming that we are basically leasing out at 100%. So all the vouchers are leased out.
So we're leasing out at 100%, but we're only receiving 98% of eligibility from HUD. In the public housing program, when he talks about the revenue, the 75% of eligibility means 75% of our eligible assistance from HUD. HUD's keeping 25%. And those are based on projections of the federal fiscal year 2013-14 budget discussions. And so we've been, in our Housing Choice Voucher program, we're going to serve over 100%, but they're only going to give us 98% of half. So we have made some adjustments, you'll see at the end of this, to compensate for that, in terms of balancing our budget.
So quick question on that. Is that 25% that they're holding like a retention? We get it like the next year?
No, that's the funding level. They may never, unless they do some change. We'll see what the final year is. We always have to do projections because the fiscal year runs from October 1st to September 30th. They haven't passed the budget yet, so we don't know. We can take our best guess based on what's in the current legislative path, and this is in a target. So 75% is a target. It may be that they try and do something with MTW reserves as well. We've been fighting that with the ASEA bill. It looks like the ASEA bill may not go forward this year. That, for us, is not necessarily a bad thing because they were trying to restrict current MTW providers. And we've been working very, very aggressively with our California delegation and other housing authorities in the state and the West Coast to try and make sure that we're protected. If MTW becomes permanent beyond 2018, it needs to be permanent with our current entitlements in our contract. And I don't think that any of us, particularly on the West Coast, can live with some of the things that they were throwing around in that bill to try and restrict us. So we have very much organized the West Coast in on related to that issue. And the bill happened to be sponsored by Representative Miller from California, as folks may not know, but he's from San Bernardino and protects the agency, as does our senator.
One last item on the assumptions I want to point out is at the very bottom under non-MTW real estate development expenses. And it's that last sentence there that talks about OHA is assuming that we're utilizing the remaining portion of Fund 1 and 2 in our budget. Okay, and you'll see that when we get to the financials themselves. On the next slide, as Janet pointed out and Eric pointed out, is the fiscal year 13 budget and 12 budget as far as staffing is flat. There is an increase of 2, which represents the 2 grants for family self-sufficiency that we received and that we're going to hire that Janet was talking about earlier. So aside from that, basically the staffing is flat. Next slide. This is the financials for the fiscal year 13 budget. The revenue, there's a slight increase year over year, and that's predominantly because of Section 8 funding. If you look at all the other fundings, pretty much they're either flat or they are on a decline. So then if you look at expenses, we basically pretty much tried to keep the expenses flat as well, so that we budgeted to 0. One thing I do want to point out to you, at the very last line on the fiscal year 13 budget, you see a negative $10 million. That is the assumption for Fund 1 and 2. Otherwise, basically, we would be showing a slight revenue, okay? So I just want to point that out to you. It's not we lost $10 million. We're funding from reserves.
And those are the obligated Fund 1 and 2, and the way we handle is we pull from the reserves that you've already obligated from previous years to pay that in the development pipeline.
Okay, so next slide. We also wanted to be a little bit more graphic and show it to you. One of the things, so this is basically the operating expenses by percent. And the one thing I do want to note is point out to you between the fiscal year 12 and the fiscal year 13 budgets is that the admin expenses is exactly the same at 9%. So we basically have held the overhead to the same, even though the revenue has increased slightly by 2% on the housing assistance. I'm sorry, the expenses have increased by 2% on the housing assistance payments, but basically we've made it up and elsewhere by reducing other expenses.
The big difference, as you see, is there was a 2% increase in HAP that we're projecting, so we had to kind of make that up in other ways. We had this line item called other general expenses, so that has really now gone into people's operational budgets so we can track it and not hold it aside. And that's just us getting better with our history of accounts so that we can project better. So in other words, that a lot of those things were placeholders. Some of it could have been last year's union negotiations holding money for the negotiations for and things like that. They're now inside the budget so that we can balance the budgets based on their income. So that's gone down to just 0.2%. Almost everything else has stayed flat. There's been a little reduction in the budgeted amount of tenant services, but not in the actual expenditures. We're way up in expenditures. And we anticipate actually spending the money that you have approved in that department going forward. We didn't spend it all last year. Yeah. And some of that was just staff vacancies. You know, we ended up not spending it. You approved X amount of positions, took time to hire. And so we always have a little more budgeted.
You just said something that puzzled me, that you took the budget down while the expenses were going up.
Well, we didn't. That's the 2012 versus 2013.
Yeah.
So the expense, what we in terms of the expenses that we budgeted in 2012, we didn't have all those expenses. There were salary savings and things, so we were able to trim back the budget without impacting.
Okay, I see. Okay.
And this was our effort to try and get more graphic and kind of analyze it a little differently for the board. Which we're just starting to do.
Yeah, okay.
Next.
Is there? Okay.
You use a different terminology than he was used to.
Okay.
This slide basically is just to show you the total expenses. The year-over-year expenses increased by $1.3 million. And basically this is just showing you where the or I'm sorry, decreased by 1.3 million. This just shows you where the decrease occurred.
And where the increases occurred in the operation.
Yeah, and you can see the increase predominantly is $974,000 in HAP expenses, and it's offset by departmental expenses going down.
And I think it's, you know, you can see the other general and the admin expenses is where we really made it work. Okay.
And that's it.
Okay. Do we have any questions? Hearing none. Thank you so much. Staff, great job once again. We'll go study this and we'll come back with questions later.
We do have
when we start comparing things, you know how we do.
So, Tony, we still have the dashboard. Okay. We do have one other add-on to the presentation, if there's no questions about the budget. One of the things that the budget committee did was try and develop a quarterly dashboard that tracks our finances for the board and the major indicators. Do we have that PowerPoint, Inez? It should be just at the end of what we just did. Yeah, it's the quarterly status report. So what we've done is provide you a period in time, and we want to walk through what it says and see if there's anything else you want to add. We can always add stuff going forward, but we want to start doing it quarterly. And we've done both financial indicators, which is, I think is mostly what you were looking for, but then we did some other key indicators on our operation down below. Okay. Do you have the? It's at the end of the one. Have you kept going?
One thing I want to bring up that Ms. Rice brought up to me is that I should point out to you when we said that our budget is at 9% admin year over year, that most housing authorities run at 10%, so we basically are doing a little
or
bit
more
better than everybody else.
Admin fees are important. Do we have it at the end of that last slideshow? No, it's on the last slideshow. It's just more slides. After questions and comments, then there's more slides. So if you get the last slideshow and go to the end, it'll be there.
Uh-oh, here comes the boss.
But we'll start walking through it. You have the printout on your desk?
Yes.
Okay.
It's in the same presentation you just were in. So do you have this, Tony?
Yep, I got
okay.
It. So thank you. I'm going to start, and then I've got help as far as explaining the dashboard. Or actually, what was the dashboard is now the... We hope to call it the quarterly status report.
There we go.
There you go.
And if you notice, it was the report formerly known as dashboard. I think that was a comment provided by the committee that we have incorporated into the report.
Good.
We wanted to change the name. I did anyway.
We needed another acronym.
I couldn't. Yeah.
The QSR.
All right.
So this is a draft for your just for your review and comments and any additions, subtractions you might want to make.
It's a draft. There's not actual numbers.
There's actual numbers, but the format is a draft for you. Okay. So I'm going to start off with a financial review, and you should have a one-pager. Basically, it looks like this, and I'm going to talk about the top. First of all, we're going to show it to you in two different ways. One of the things, if you could take a look in the far left-hand column of the financial review, it's numbered, okay? So when you go on the slide that you're looking at, number one corresponds to row one. So in number one, it talks about tenant revenue, and basically that's the money that the tenant pays. Do you want me to slow down? Yes?
No,
okay.
Good.
No. You're good? Okay. Row two basically is operating subsidy from HUD for public housing only. And then row three is subsidy from HUD for Section 8. And you can see that that's usually the largest number, next to the HAP payments is the largest number. The fourth row is basically all the other grants. It's FSS, ROS, Capital Fund, ARA. It's all summarized in there. The biggest number in there typically when you didn't include ARA was the capital fund. And then number five is what we call total fees earned. And that basically correlates with a lower section. That is the central office cost center, which also includes this room and a lot of the staff in here. The reason why it's lower than the budget is because when we talk about reducing our expenses, when our expenses are lower, we have less money to charge out, which is a good thing. Okay. the number number five is total fees earned, and typically what that is in there is developer fees and ground lease. It's number six, I'm sorry.
Okay. So
that was five, right?
I'm sorry.
And when we do this, we will have the numbered list with you. So we're going to do the same number. There'll be a cover sheet to it that will reiterate what you're seeing on the slide, you know, what's in each one.
Sorry, green doesn't show up real well when you're looking down on the fluorescent. Okay. Number, I'm going down to the expenses. Let me stop for a second. Total revenue is $115 million year-to-date actual. That's 6 months ended December. And then what we had budgeted is $111 million. So basically, we're at a little bit over $4 million over budget in our revenue, or roughly about 3.9% over the budget.
Does everyone understand that? Our revenue is higher, so we're 3.9% in the black, not the red. Okay.
And this is 6 months, right?
Yeah, this was, we used December. We just threw this together.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure.
We got to work all the internal mechanisms with Excel to make this all roll up and things. Mm-hmm. So that's it.
It's all right. Cool.
That's a lie.
I should say. Going back to, now I'm going to go down to expenses, and I'm referring back to the numbers. So number eight is salaries, benefits, and office expenses. That's what's in that number eight line of total administrative expenses. Number nine is family community partnerships, site intervention. That's what is in tenant services. And number 10 is utilities. 11 is maintenance. I'm going to skip down to number 14 because the other ones are pretty self-explanatory. I'm going to go down to number 14. Number 14, total other expense is basically insurance and workers' comp. Mm-hmm. That is rolled up in total other expenses. Mm-hmm. Okay. So total expenses is about $106 million year to date. Budget is about $110 million. So we are under budget by $4.5 million, about 4.1% under the budget. So when you take a look at the excess revenue over expense line, we're showing roughly almost $10 million in excess revenue over expenses, and we had budgeted about $1 million. So between, and that's a good thing. So what I'm saying is we're over budget in our revenue and we're under budget in our expenses, so consequently, we have contributed about $8.8 million to the bottom line.
So,
yes, sir.
So we're essentially 8% ahead of what the budget was. I mean, if you add what we're under.
Yeah, our revenues are up about 4 and our expenses are down about 4. So mid-year, that's where we are. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to end the year there because there could be big checks.
That's what I was just going to ask.
But it's useful, I think, and hopefully it will be useful, that if you look at I think one of the big reasons to make it quarterly is that monthly changes get lost. Even in our monthly report we give you, unless you can compare them over 3 months, then you see trends, and trends are what the dashboard's for. You know, how are we doing in terms of this, not just financials, but some of the other indicators are to look at it over a short period of time during the year to make sure we're on track.
Yes, sir.
Well, I was just going to dig deeper into that. Is there any major upcoming revenue or expense that makes you think that we can't look at this as a kind of amortized over 12 months?
Absolutely.
Number?
Sometimes you'll have a $5 million check you write in July, and then everything will be off for the whole year. Sometimes you'll write it in June, and so your budget is showing, you know, too much. You're not pacing your expenses enough till the end of the year. In terms of variance reports, which is not a dashboard, but if you do detailed variance reports, generally if there's an item that's either 5 or 10% out, you have a comment from staff explaining either they haven't bid that yet, that's held because of X, Y, and Z, a good chunk of it could be staffing. You budget a position this year, you approve it this year, but we don't actually get the recruitment out until November, and we don't really hire them until March, so you have 3/4 of that salary savings. That's a variance report. In terms of something this large, we debated whether to put comments on the right, but we thought we'd rather just produce the report and have a conversation about the variance rather than try and fit something in a tight space. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it would be helpful if there are kind of ticking time bombs either way. So if there's a huge balloon payment in November, mm-hmm. it'd be helpful to know. And if there's a huge, you know, developer fee payment in November, it'd be helpful mm-hmm. to know as well. Sure. So I don't know if that warrants another whole column, which is kind of expected future payments or revenue till December 31, 2012, or if that's just listed in the comments section as like one or two, you know, variation data points that warrant some further, just so we know that, you know, 8 million up now might mean, you know, we should look at it as 16 million up by the end of the year, because there could be some major items coming up.
We can do that, but also bear in mind that when you look at the reserve schedule, that also gives you a projection of when developer fees and extra, those large payments that you're talking about are going out.
And for example, in the budget, and things to keep in mind, next year's budget, we include Fund 1 and 2 in the budget. So we're saying we're going to spend that money. Now, if the deals don't need the money at that point, they get rolled over to the next year. That's why it's always pulled from reserves. So that's a hard balancing act to kind of reflect on this. But we want to make sure we have the commitments you've made are budgeted in a way that we can write the checks when we need to write the checks. And they're included in the budget. So trending it toward our expenses and revenue, which is what we're trying to do, tells you if our daily operations are going south, you know, or if we're doing well. In case of this budget, we over-budgeted certain areas last year, I think, and that's why we were able to make the adjustments this year. And they're reflected in some of this. We're just not going to get around to expending the money that we had budgeted, so we're going to have those savings.
And I think that's another report, one that we'll call windshield report, looking ahead.
Okay.
Continue.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Hartwig has his hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think that if we can do this, it would be very helpful to have what I usually refer to as an explanation of variance.
Sure.
And the reason for that is if this thing's out there floating around and you know, someone looks at this, you know, I mean, the natural human tendency is to extrapolate the numbers, you see.
Yeah.
And then so you're looking at that and you're going, whoa, man, these people are doing a lot better than any of us thought. And it also raises a question of, well, wait a minute, this business is not really packed full of surprises here. Why, you know, why are we getting that? I mean, even if it's good news, I mean, because part of the mission is to really understand the business and be able to predict it accurately, whatever it is.
Well, I would say that our mission is we do understand the business and we do predict it remarkably accurately. The board's business is trying to understand it. We understand it. I think we know our numbers, and we're just trying to help you
well, that
with this
is
report.
Always the issue. Okay. Yes, it's always the issue.
I think maybe
to educate those that are not in the inner circle.
Yeah,
that
what
is
I would,
the task.
What I certainly hear what you're saying, and I think we need to probably add a box at the bottom for some verbiage. I want to get away from each line report because I think we can't fit into that.
No, wait.
So maybe at the bottom an explanation.
Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. An explanation of variance report is not a detailed pile of hogwash,
yeah.
All right? It is an executive level explanation of variance.
Mm-hmm.
So that instead of looking at this and going, well, okay, we trust you. It's it's really not going to be a 16% swing by the end of the year. You see, we can look at this and go, oh, okay, there's payment timing issues. There's revenue timing issues. There's some big things out there floating around
mm-hmm.
that weren't accrued. You know, I mean, an expense
yeah.
that wasn't accrued yet or a revenue that wasn't accrued yet or something like that.
Or an obligation that is outstanding.
And it doesn't have to be, you know, I mean, I don't want to look at a bunch of boring detail. I mean, I just want to know essentially, okay, we got good news, great, but why is it so good? And it should be explainable like that.
Yeah, really. In a box below right? there, put
yeah,
a note section.
Yeah. I mean, it's I not think that's like a great idea. Stuff it in yeah. a container down here. Yeah.
So moving from the financial down to the actual operations of property management and leased housing. So we have, you know, what we want to do is in property operations, we want to provide you with three major indicators that can tell us. One is tenant accounts receivable, how we're collecting rent, what is that, how's that going?
Thank you.
The other is our work orders so that you can tell, are we getting into units and are we correcting things and what's the timeline? And if you look at the numbers, you want to look at trends in all this because you, whether they're getting better or worse. Mm-hmm. The point is comparative data. And so if you're looking at work orders through January, February, and March, those open more than 30 days have gone up, and that's not good. And so that's what you want to pay attention to. And if you look at the rent collections from January, February, and March that are delinquent more than 61 days, those have gone down. That's good. You know, that's the point of putting this report together separate from just the monthly reports.
Gotcha.
We want to include the adjusted occupancy rates. The rates for OP are not adjusted. We just put them in there as a but we didn't tweak them. But what the idea is to show you the total units, the available units, how many are occupied in our occupancy rates, so you can see if they're going up, down, what's going on. And in that case, we may actually also add a box to say what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, how many units are under mod rehab with OP when they're, you know, what that's about. And that simplifies, mm-hmm. I think those yeah. things give you our main indicators, and we can think about adding stuff after we get this going. In the Section 8 program, it's a pretty simple, there's some pretty simple indicators we can provide, and we've listed them. The baseline units that we have to provide, January, February, and March. How many units are leased, and you can see those numbers. What's the percentage leased, and keep in mind we want to manage to 100%. Not 99, not 101, and it's really a challenge to do. Mm-hmm. But 99.8 is pretty darn close. 96, see, we went back up. Mm-hmm. The number of units over and under leased is to watch. And then the last one I put on there so you get an idea how many people are out there looking, how many vouchers could hit us, you know, could lease up and take us mm-hmm. to the range. Mm-hmm. When I'm talking about hitting 100%, we're talking about hitting 100% for the year. So for our fiscal year, we want to try and be as close to or a little bit above 100%. Any given month, we could be 98. Next month, we could be 94. We're shooting for 100% for the average year because that's what HUD's looking for in us. So those are really the driving indicators for HUD and I think for us in terms of the two core businesses and then the financials so you can get an idea of how we're pacing and we're not spending too much or spending too little.
Yeah, I would like to add something. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in also seeing little boxes of variances so that when we have 10-2-1 looking at this report, they're not thinking that those boxes indicate that we have a surplus of money, especially when at the end of the year it's gone. Okay.
I think it's a great I hadn't thought about it until yes. you'd mentioned. I honestly didn't even dawn on me that it would become
yeah. I just want to put that on record yeah. so it wasn't a misunderstanding.
Yeah. Right. So we're going to start rolling that out, and that's our report.
Sweet. Ooh.
And I want to thank the committee for sitting through the presentations and giving us the feedback, and I hope we responded well, and I want to actually thank Commissioner Hurd when she attended. She said, can we do some pie charts to help us understand better? And so that was really our tweaking. And they really help. They really do help make much clearer in terms of year after year and also in where our money is going.
Pictures.
Yeah.
I think Patricia had something to say. I don't know if you said it all for her.
You did everything wonderful, Janet and I are done.
Okay. Mr. Hartwick had his hand up. Ms. Castillo has her hand up.
Oh, you may go.
You're so kind.
Ladies before gentlemen.
I really do want to appreciate and comment on how well the report came out. It really looks good. It's understandable, Commissioner Hurd. Thank you for including the pie charts. It just helps me understand it so much better. So thank you so much for presenting it this way. I was just curious. I know that we're going to get another update, I guess, in 3 months. But the delinquency amount that we have over 61 days, mm-hmm. is that the norm? Or are we have... Are we going to perhaps reduce that a little bit more?
It's not the norm, but and you're referring to delinquency on rent collections?
Yes.
Yeah. It's not the norm. One of the things that's reflected in that is, again, the impact twofold. One, the impact of lease violations and when people are in non-payment of rent. So that sits in there. And we are always having a cadre, you know, X number of clients who are in an unlawful detainer process. The other impact would be that as we transition units and are leased under the Housing Choice Voucher Program, if there's a delay in receiving the HAP because the unit's still being rehabbed and under inspection, that could reflect the fact that there's a delinquency on there. It's one of the things that when you looked at the goals for property management, that increasing the timeliness of our lease compliance as well as rent collections should see a gradual increase over the next 12 months.
You know, and I just want to add that we should see an increase, but there are two things to take into consideration. One is the length of time it gets to get through a UD process, and so we hold that because we don't accept rent. But the other thing Patricia's not saying is that that number was more than double that, and she has been working with staff for a number of years to bring that down in a humane way. And that was with Anna Kadanovskaya and herself really over the past few years really working and focusing. We don't, you know, we're not in a business to not to make people homeless, so we really go out of our ways to work with them. But it's also in doing that, we have not evicted a whole bunch of people behind non-payment of rent. We've actually worked with them. So, and the number has come down. And it is more than half of what it was 4 years ago.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I believe in you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hartley. I just wanted to commend you for this. This is the end of a long and turbulent road that has now come to a fantastic fruition, because I think that everybody here is really excited to have this kind of information now at our fingertips. And so you know, I want to thank everyone for really doing a great job, and I think we've come to a really good common sense sort of great start point on this. So, nice job.
Yeah, nice job by all those involved. And what's also nice is we have systems that can start delivering the data, and we're working on even improving that further. So,
and I want to add my sentiments to that, to the Budget Committee, who sat down and worked it out and brought forward those things that we needed so that we can better understand. This is called teamwork, where we're working together to try to get the answers so we can be more effective in the requests that we make and timely in doing it too. Yes. Okay.
Cool.
Moving right along.
Did we take an action? We have to.
Oh.
Do we need to do something?
You have to approve it for
HUD. I thought it was just a report.
No, we have
I
to.
I move approving the item.
I'll second.
Oh, that's right, the budget.
Yeah. It's good, Moses. You're making me calm.
It was moved and seconded. Any more discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the same sign. Any abstentions? It's carried.
It's carried.
Thank you, commissioners.
We're going.
I already signed the forms.
I knew that be stricken from the record.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, item B.
Item B is a consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to commit $8.3 million and execute a firm loan commitment and construction and or permanent financing, gap financing, to Bridge Housing to fund the development of 460 Grand Avenue. This is an item we discussed in closed session during the retreat at length, and I'd like to have Phil Neville come up and give us a report on the current status and update us, if he can.
Good evening, commissioners. Again, Phil Neville, Deputy Director for Development. And in the audience tonight, I want to point out we have two guests from EAH Housing. Some of you may have seen them at the recent ceremonial groundbreaking on the site. We have Matt. I'm sorry. I'm on the wrong item.
You're on the next item.
There's something in the air tonight.
Wait, that's the next item.
That's the bond issuance.
Item B is we have in the audience with us Joe McCarthy. Joe McCarthy from Bridge. I'm so anxious to get through. Joe McCarthy from Bridge Housing is here with us tonight, and our project manager. and Deputy Director of the Development Department is Bridget Galka, and they're here tonight. So once again, as Eric said, we covered this item fairly thoroughly last month, and Commissioner Nagraj actually had some comments that led to us putting this off for a month and bringing it back. And it had to do, we wanted to explore a little bit with Bridge in the city of Oakland, the conditions under which they might extend the entitlements. We were feeling some pressure, if you'll recall, to move the project forward before the entitlements expire at the end of the year. So Mr. McCarthy was able to work with the city of Oakland and Bridget on our team and get some answers that they will be willing to roll our entitlements over. Therefore, we thought we'd go with the more aggressive strategy that in fact would involve using a smaller amount of the Housing Authority's funds. And if we don't get, if that aggressive approach, which would be applied for the 9% tax credits, doesn't work for us, we still have the option of falling back on the bond and 4% approach, which we've used so successfully at Lion Creek Crossings and over multiple phases and Tassafaronga and et cetera. So we have that good news. We're bringing the recommendation back to you with just a few little tweaks, as you'll see on the memorandum, and to remind you of what we did last month on this. Also, Commissioner Nagraj has also asked that we make sure that we still try to get the funds up to $680,000 from the Federal Home Loan Bank Board's Affordable Housing Program, AHP program, which is a really neat type of money because it's, even though it's initially stated as a loan, it becomes a grant if you follow their rules over time. So those are the highlights for tonight. Again, the gap would be, as you may recall, about $8.3 million if we go for the 4% in bonds. But if we go for 9%, we can reduce that grant to closer to $6.8 million, which is the really neat thing about it. And the fact the city understands the difficulty of moving developments forward in this environment with the recession and the redevelopment agencies going away. In this case, Bridge did apply for CETA NOFA funds, about $4.5 million. And they're not going to come to us, and we know that. They've also already applied for AHP funds, I believe, on two occasions and have been denied so far. But we will be persistent. So with that, if there's any questions or if you'd like to ask questions of our guest tonight, Mr. McCarthy from Bridge is here.
I'll move the item.
It's been moved. No second? We could still have discussion.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Okay. Any questions? Yes. Mr. Nagraj.
Okay. So I am generally in favor of this project. I'm very excited for it. The elevation is beautiful. Family housing, great location. What am I doing? I'm making a motion for proposed modified language to the resolution. A friendly amendment. Incorporating, kind of formalizing what Phil had just said, that the loan request to the agency, we're authorizing a financing gap for up to $8.3 million, and our final loan in the end will be reduced by the amount of AHP award that Bridge is successful in securing.
I'd like to bring Bridget Galk up just for a clarification.
Good evening, Commissioners. We're going to apply for AHP whether we submit for 9% or 4%. The 9%, $6.8 million gap doesn't assume that we received AHP because we need all of our sources for the 9% application in order to be competitive. But the gap for the 4% did assume that we received the AHP. Mm-hmm. So if we get AHP and we have to go the less aggressive 4% route, and then we reduce the gap by the amount of the AHP, we'll have a gap.
So what she's saying is that the motion can only be for the 9%.
So we can reduce it for the 9%, but not for the 4%.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. We need the money for the 4% deal.
Okay.
If we have to go to 4%.
So can we memorialize that yes. for the 9%, yes. we'll reduce it by the 600, whatever the K
yes.
the
So the 6.8 million would be reduced by 680,000, or up to 680,000.
That's right. If we go the 9% route, and if we go the 4% route, then it will be up to that 8.3 million. I just want to make sure that there's still some teeth in the resolution that if yes. they're successful,
we consider
we worry about
we capture,
kind of
yeah, yeah, that's
blank
cool.
checks that are given over yeah. to developers. So we want that formalized in the resolution.
We'll let the motion include that.
Is that right? That's, yeah. yes. That's the person that moved the made the motion. He wanted to include that amendment. He's
yes.
accepting the friendly amendment.
Yes. Saying that yeah. friendly amendment.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I say just? I want to. My name is Joe McCarthy. I'm the project manager with Bridge. I've been with Bridge for just over 11 years. I'm considered a freshman in the executive and project management staff. But just want to thank you very much. We appreciate all your work on this project and your consideration. For 460 Grand. We think it's a pretty special site. We're pretty excited about it. We think it has incredible merits. Its location providing, quality affordable housing in a neighborhood that needs it in Oakland. Also providing low and very low families, incredible access to Lake Merritt, Lakeside Park, transit, as well as a lot of the services along the Grand Avenue corridor. And also from, a planning and design standpoint, it helps kind of activate, energize that part of Grand. It seems to kind of die down there when you go from downtown to Grand Lake area. So I think on several levels, this is an incredible, incredible little project. Even though it's little, there still seems to be, I think it can make an amazing impact. But the project itself is an incredible testament, I think, to our partnership that goes back to, I think, the early 90s or mid to late 90s. Yes, which through that partnership, it's allowed Bridge to develop some of the best projects in our portfolio, and we appreciate that. And I believe that this will be right up there with Mandela Gateway and Chestnut Linden and St. Joseph. So, again, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sorry, I actually did have a question. It's been a while since I've looked at a deal without any city money. So how does your lease-up work? From what lists? And with what agencies are you going to work on leasing the building?
So we have project-based Section 8. So we will be working with the Housing Authority, so half the units, 34.
Right.
So we'll be working through your process. We also will work, we do our marketing and advertising in the area. Our project property management staff is really well-versed. And also we'll use the waiting list that we have at other projects here in Oakland, too.
Okay.
So. Certainly kind of an ongoing, and we'll start 6 months before we complete construction so that we can lease up within every 3 to 4 months after we've completed. So.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Any other questions? Ms. Hurd.
Thank you. It says that a Bridge will apply again for the AHP after the project receives its building permit. And I wanted to know what is the time frame for that to happen.
So typically our experience in the city of Oakland, once you submit for building permits and you're in that process to get those approvals, they will send the required letter for AHP
okay.
that says that your project is complete.
Okay.
And so that is the assumption that we're making here for this project. So.
They send the letter. Okay, great. Thank you.
Great.
Mr. Hartwig.
Oh, this is actually for Bridget.
Okay.
I'm just dying with curiosity as to why the grant was included with the 4% tax credits, but not with the 9%. Is that because if you get the 4%, the grant people take more pity on you and you're more likely
no,
to get
No, we
the
want
grant?
To go for the 9% because it's a better deal if we don't
no,
get
no,
it
no,
with
no.
the 4.
My question was, I understand the 9% is a better deal. My question is, why was the reception of the grant assumed with the 4%,
but not
assumed with the 9%?
Because we won't have an award in time to apply, and you have to have your funding and sources in place before you can apply for 9%. So we could get the award after we've submitted our application for 9%.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's not impossible to get. It's just
I was just curious why that was.
You can actually get AHP while you're under construction. So we think we have about 4 more bites at the apple for AHP.
Cool.
That's the good news.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Any other questions? One more question. That's what everybody says. I got one more question. Okay. Hearing none, we have a motion with an amendment that's incorporated into it. Ashley is supposed to vote on the amendment first, but since he incorporated it into his motion, we don't have to do that. Okay? So we're just going to vote on it. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Any abstentions? Did you say aye? I see. Okay. Carried. Motion is carried. Moving on to item C.
Item C is consideration of resolution authorizing and approving the issuance and delivery up to $21 million of multifamily revenue bonds for the Cathedral Housing Project, authorizing the lending of the proceeds of the bonds to Cathedral Housing Oakland Limited Partnership, authorizing the execution and delivery of bond issuance and pledge agreement, loan agreement, regulatory agreement, and other such documents as are necessary for the issuance of the bond. Has to be one of the longest titles of a resolution I've read recently.
Yes.
I will turn it over to Phil Neville for a brief presentation on this
project.
Don't
talk about computers.
Okay.
That's next.
Got a deal. Again, Phil Neville, to the board. I apologize for the formality and the, kind of the overwritten nature of this resolution, but our bond counsel insists that it include all this stuff. In fact, he's even asked us to bring copies of each of these documents, the pledge agreement, the loan agreement, the regulatory agreement, to the meeting, even though there's no way you want to try to look at those tonight. So, but at any rate, I started to introduce our guest tonight, Matt Steinle, Vice President with EAH, and Benny Kwong, who's the project manager with EAH, and they have been working on this project with us for, I think, since before we acquired the property several years ago. And they're in about the fourth row there, and we can bring them up as needed tonight. You undoubtedly saw them at the event the other day, Chair Main, and Eric was there. I'm trying to remember who else might have come. Oh, Barbara Montgomery, weren't you there?
I think so.
And yes, you were. And I'm just trying to remember if I saw any other faces there. It was well attended with Mayor Kwan in the lead with the comments and all. So tonight we have in front of you a authorization. Now, you've done the bond inducement resolution for this project, and you've also made a pre-development loan, and you've also allocated Section 8 vouchers. So this is a, you've seen this, and you authorized us to acquire the property. So those of you who've been on the board for several years have seen this project brought to you a number of times. Tonight, it's maybe a little simpler transaction in a way, because it's the final authorization of the bonds that have already been induced. And we've already gone to, am I out of time, Mr. Chair? I can sit down. So again, as is stated on the front page of the memorandum, we're not asking for you to allocate any more of our money or your various sources of funds at the Housing Authority. We're actually looking to for your authority to issue these bonds and deliver them. And the borrower is Cathedral Gardens Oakland LP, a limited partnership that is being put together by EAH. And as you know from reading these memos that we send you on this item, the investor joins in with EAH as the general partner in this project, and the tax credit investor actually brings more money to the deal than any other party. But in this case, we'll be issuing up to $21 million in bonds. They'll be privately placed to J.P. Morgan Chase, and in spite of the recent news on J.P. Morgan Chase, they're standing behind this commitment. Merit Capital has submitted an incredible offer to be the tax credit investor on this deal. There is no risk to the authority. The bonds, they're project revenue bonds. They do not get paid back by the Housing Authority, and the documents are constructed in such a way that it's what's called a limited obligation of the Housing Authority. Now, I would say that our own project manager, Clint Loffman, who's sitting with Benny and Matt four rows back, between Benny and him, they know every little detail about the project, and we'd be happy to bring them up if needed. And Matt is kind of the mad scientist that sits in the back room with a calculator and figures out how we can make all the numbers work, because it isn't easy. So they're all here tonight and be happy to bring them up and have further discussion. But we recommend your approval.
I'll move it.
Mr. Negrage's hand was up first, so I'm going to recognize him first. Well, no, we're recognizing Mr. Negrage first because I saw his hand first.
I had two questions. One, so I see that financed in part by the City of Oakland. Do you see any? I was in Sacramento yesterday doing some stuff with, proposed clawbacks or redevelopment money. Do you know the source of that City of Oakland money? Is it redevelopment? Because yesterday they were talking about a bunch of projects that were financed with RDA funds through cities that are actually going to get clawed back.
Well, Benny took the lead on applying two different years for CETA-NOFA funds and was successful twice in a row. And that's why we have such a large amount of CETA-NOFA funds, between $9 and $10 million. And they are from past years before the elimination of the redevelopment agencies, so they're not caught up in any issue about whether the funding will stand. Benny and Matt and Clint have all worked with the city. We have weekly meetings that include the city staff, and these funds are beyond reach of the governor and his program. So we're in good shape here.
Okay, so that money is safe for the project. Yeah. And then a second thing, I mean, you alluded to this. I understand that the loan agreement and regulatory agreement are huge. And at the same time, it's, when we're passing a resolution that says we are agreeing that number eight, the form of the loan agreement, including the terms provisions thereof presented at this meeting is approved, and the form of regulatory agreement approved at this meeting is approved, we're approving something that we are not looking at. And I'm not sure what to do with that. I know it's a ton of documents.
Let me tell you why we do it that way. For some years, have had the strategy of not bringing contract documents here, but the bond council said they need to be in the room. So if Clint won't mind walking up to to Commissioner Nagraj's desk, this is exactly what we were advised to do by our bond council.
Well, but I mean, practically, it doesn't make sense that in the meeting, we're right now signing off that we're approving documents that we haven't read. So maybe that's custom and what we always do, but it's awkward for me to read this saying that we approve these documents.
Quite often what we do is we have our legal counsel read it and say that these documents are in order and they're proper and summarize it for us so that we can say, okay, right, we trust you, we're moving on this.
Yeah.
And then allows us to go in and look at it at our leisure, so that, or even before meeting, so that we can look at it and say, okay, we had a chance to look at it, we saw it, we liked it, or these things we think might need to change, and then we go and respond to that thing. But you can always bring something back in the next meeting and say, I saw this, there's a problem here, and I think we need to address it, okay?
And I think the issue with what the chair is saying is that very few people have the skill and capacity and experience to read one of the documents and wouldn't recognize when something was wrong. Mm-hmm. So what we do in the authority and everywhere I've worked is always defer it to our council for review, and that's why it goes through council.
Yeah, I mean, I think practically what would make the most sense is hearing our council kind of sign off on it, and we would all trust her.
Absolutely.
But because I do feel awkward signing off on something saying that.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
There is trust.
Yeah. Isabel Brown of my office is the person who's working on this project, and she's intimately involved in and has reviewed the documents, right, and will continue to review everything else, all the other legal documents that are connected with this project.
Thank you, Jennifer. And
I think he's also asking for not just a review, but that it's something that's beneficial.
Oh,
Okay. Well, approval. I mean, that's what her job is.
Okay. She might say, oh, I looked at it.
it's not like she's just reviewing them. She's reviewing, commenting, negotiating. I mean, that's what you're paying her for.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
I mean, I think
she's actually working.
That's what we needed to hear.
Right.
Okay.
I think, like, the more official thing, like we do in tax credit applications where it says, you know, Goldfarb kind of signs off where this is so that we can not just hear that at a meeting, but to have some more formality of our attorneys kind of sign off on this before.
Yeah.
So that we're not put in a position of having to sign something that we're, you know.
I mean, we can do something like that. I'm not, it's Isabel who worked on it. I don't know why the bond counsel put this language in. Were you using BalladSpar again in this?
Yes, David.
Because it isn't always required, but you know, for whatever reason, he's got it in here.
His bond counsel, he wrote all the documents, and he is our attorney for that. And Chair Main and Director Johnson work with him to sign the documents. And I do think there's probably somewhere something we could do different. And my observation is, in the future, we could give a more complete description of what each document does.
I can also ask Isabel and David, you know, why this requirement is in this particular resolution.
Mm-hmm. Well, David told us that the bond documents need to be present in the room. They don't have to be read by board members who may not. Take a look at his resolution just for one example, and the documents are more complicated than this. So. It was an election we made some years ago with respect to this, but we're happy to spend more time and explain these documents.
Or maybe including in the staff report a letter from our counsel or BalladSpar saying we sign off.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea.
Okay.
Well, you're not always going to get that. In the sense that, I mean, to be frank with you, sometimes you're going to have a resolution that's approved something that is substantially in the form and the negotiations are still going on. And you know that, Adi. I would hesitate to have a certification from the lawyer if you have a deadline for a resolution, when, you know, that's what you're paying us for. You know, we're not going to let you go ahead with it without being satisfied with it. We're not going to have Chair Main or Executive Director Johnson sign it, but there can be timing issues since you only meet once a month that the documents may not be finalized, but you're approving them in concept subject to any changes that may be made that don't materially affect the substance of what you've approved.
Yeah, that's why I talked about the next meeting. And I realized that if we got the approval, it would have a whole lot of disclaimers with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We beat that one. I did hear a motion, and I did hear a second. And you have a question. Okay. Okay. I got to say something for it. It's been moved and seconded. Now.
I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt. Can we get the approval again?
Mr. Motion. Hartwig made the motion, and Ms. Hurd seconded it. Right. Now she wants to ask a question. Please.
Thank you. It's in reference to the tax bond financing. It says that J.P. Morgan Chase loaned the bond receipts at a reduced interest rate. Mm-hmm. And I know with the interest rates fluctuating, what would that reduced rate be?
Let's go ahead and bring Matt up. I can answer that, but okay. Matt's kind of a specialist in this area, so let's have him talk.
Good evening, Commissioners. Commissioner Hurd, I did not get all of your question. I believe your question,
it's
though,
in reference
essentially
to the reduced.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Interest rate.
The reduced interest rate.
Yeah. The interest rate on the bonds is going to be fixed. I think we're going to do a lock about 5 days prior to the close. We're having our pre-closing, we hope, on the 18th. The indicative rate today, which is based on a spread off of the Federal Reserve's 10-year swap times a tax-exempt factor of 70.88%, is a little below 4.8% with respect to the permanent rate on the bonds. And, of course, we have a LIBOR-based floating rate on the construction period bonds. I hope that's helpful. If there's any clarification I can add.
Yeah, I've just been reading a lot about that, what's going on out there. So.
You answered the question. Thank you.
Thank you. Complicated, but I think we can understand it. Go ahead, Mr. Hartwig.
Yes, so Chair Main just was curious, Mr. Neville, as to how you could possibly have forgotten that I was in attendance at the cathedral groundbreaking. And that was part of my quick motivation in wanting to approve this, because it's such a gorgeous place and such a fine location. And I would like to say to everyone that if you haven't seen this site, you know, it's really worth going by and taking a look at it, because it's a really hot location, and it's going to be a great place for our residents.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he says?
And he says.
You know, I knew I'd seen him at one or the other of the ceremony events. I guess it was.
I'm just everywhere.
I wasn't.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Any abstentions? It's unanimously carried. Thank you so much.
Item D, adoption, authorization to purchase 60 computers for the leased housing department from Dell Computers. This is authorization to issue a purchase order to purchase 60 new computers needed in the department as part of our upgrade and paperless systems.
Okay, I want to back that up. Mm-hmm. I think we should go to F.
I think
and then we should come
idea.
Back to D and E.
I think that's a wonderful idea. Item F is a presentation of meeting the needs of women policies, programs, and practices. It was a presentation that was given in Washington, D.C. by Deputy Executive Director Patricia Eisen at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health conference held in March. When were we there?
March
of this year. I'll turn it over to Ms. Eisen, and if you watch your monitors, you can see some video, and I know we have some. We have three women in the audience.
Yeah, we do.
Introduce.
First of all, thank you, Mr. Johnson, and thank you, Chair, for noticing our illustrious guests this evening, who I want to introduce first because they've been so patient. And just so you know that we know how to do home and we know how to do family, so during the first part of the presentation, they did get to enjoy dinner in the back, so we took care of the
they
ladies.
My
okay?
dinner?
With us this evening is one of the superstars, actually, of the MOMS program, MOMS being Maximizing Opportunities for Mothers. And that's Ms. Vernita Green, who's a case manager with CenterForce, the nonprofit that has been managing the supportive services for the MOMS program for roughly about 4 years now. And I know that Vernita has some items that she wants to distribute to the board. And after the presentation, if you will, that we'd give her and the ladies a chance to speak, but I wanted to run through the presentation first. Also with Vernita is Deborah, who is actually in the last segment of her program at our MOMS program there on Seminary Avenue. She started in March of 2011, has about 6 months to go, and with her is an angel named Sonia, who has been so patient. That Sonia, the team wanted to give you something from our conference we just went to on Monday, so this is just a little something to make you So thank you for being so patient. And then lastly, another one of our superstars, Mary Lou, who you will be seeing in our presentation. And not only is Mary Lou about to graduate from the program after successfully completing 18 months, but during her tenure with the MOMS program, she was our resident custodian at the MOMS site. So she was one of our contractors for taking care of the site there. And so we thank her for that. One of the things I want to point out is that the MOMS program is in its 12th year, and interestingly enough, has gotten tons of attention. Just last Friday, the Housing Authority hosted the New York City Housing Authority, who came specifically Despite being the largest housing authority in the nation with over 180,000 families that they serve, they wanted to see our boutique moms program, and the moms and the sheriff's department, and I should mention the director of programs is Sheriff Saul, Ben Shaw, and the director of programs is Dorothy Lyles of Center Force. They couldn't be here with us this evening, and Bernita is representing a very strong team. But when the New York City Housing Authority was here, and it was co-hosted by Commissioner Nagraj and Mr. Johnson and our team, they were extremely impressed by what we've been able to accomplish, and they got a chance to interview with three of the moms, actually, at that time, heard a lot about promotions that had just taken place, graduations that had just taken place, and one of our mom's participants also went to New York City, because she has launched a 12-step program for Narcotics Anonymous, and she was then going to share that news and those results in New York. So the MOMS program is a seed for flourishing much more than what we're about to see here, and I just wanted to point it out that we are on the map because of the work of these ladies. So I am thankful for that, honored to give this presentation, and want to make mention that the presentation includes embedded videos, so you're going to hear from several of our participants tonight, and so that'll pop up and pop down, and the presentation was created actually by our administrative assistant in the EO, Julie Christiansen. With that, can we launch? Again, you know, one of the beauties of the MOMS program is it highlights what the Housing Authority does well, and that's interagency relationships. We know how to leverage resources with minimal funding, and generally it's because we have partners like Center Force and the Sheriff's Department who have people who not only have the professional skills but are jack of all trades. One of the things you'll note is that the unification of the two missions of both the Housing Authority as well as the MOMS program. Our mission of providing affordable, safe housing, promoting civic involvement, and promoting economic self-sufficiency merges perfectly with the program mission of MOMS to focus on mother-child bonding, building a solid foundation to support and sustain mother and children, and reduce recidivism back into the system. And we have one of our moms to speak to what that means to her.
How is the housing?
My children, my babies, like, that's the greatest gift, is that I have my children, you know. This was the biggest piece to me, get my children back, was the housing. And I just, that's all I can say, is that my babies.
So our housing is part of a program that serves several hundred women who have been in custody in Santa Rita Jail. We serve 11 of them every year through our MOMS program, and it is the jewel of us being able to provide the unit that means so much more, not just to the mother reuniting with the children, but the future of the children themselves. While in D.C., we were able to point out the portfolio of the Housing Authority's imprint on the city of Oakland, and the fact that MOMS, interestingly enough, sits almost like the heart of our portfolio. If you look up seminary, when I showed you earlier, Inez, it's one of the little jewel dots that's there in the city. And we'll speak to that a little bit later, because if you'll notice, it's deeply placed in one of the most dense parts of the city of Oakland that does have many of the traditional barriers of low-income situations in that part of the program. The program goals, number one, to promote the healthy development of children by increasing the capacity of incarcerated mothers for self-sufficiency and parenting skills with an emphasis on child-parent bonding, to reduce recidivism amongst incarcerated pregnant women and incarcerated mothers of young children. And I just want to note that one of the things the sheriff asked me to highlight is that sometimes those mothers may be grandparents raising their children, and raising children that are older children as well as younger children. Although one of the requirements for the MOMS program is that the mother has to either be pregnant at the time of arrest and or have children under the age of 18, but that mom could be a grandparent. And then lastly, to demonstrate a replicable community-oriented criminal justice model for assisting incarcerated pregnant women and mothers towards self-sufficiency, family reunification, and reversal of previous adverse behaviors. Now, again, these are the program goals of the overarching MOMS program operated out of the Sheriff's Department in Santa Rita Jail. The housing authorities piece of it is the part that arguably most housing authorities and most jurisdictions are looking to replicate. And it's quite frankly challenging. Being MTW and some of the courage and the magic of our agency and our board to approve this kind of project is not necessarily something that other housing authorities have an opportunity to replicate. When you look at how we started on our next slide, it started in 1999, again, by the Alameda County Sheriff Charles Prummer and a broad base of community leaders who got together because of a study that basically pointed out the challenges of women who had been in custody. A 98 analysis came up with some very striking points. That 75% of 339 pregnant women who were in custody were chemically dependent at the point of expecting children. Many had reoccurring mental health problems. Nearly 80% were repeat offenders. About 20% were homeless, and most were low income. Repeat offenders is something that, as the moms have shared their stories with us, greatly impacts how they look at themselves and how they move forward, but it's the key to being ready to have the MOMS program be a fruit. Can we see that video, please?
What do you think made the difference for you the second time?
The reality check was I had to really want something for myself. Someone was out there to help me, which was the MOMS program. Somebody gave their hand to me and said, you know, I'm going to help you and your children. And I wasn't used to that, so I didn't know how to appreciate that. So I got comfortable in the lifestyle that I was living, and I lived that lifestyle thinking it was okay. You know, I didn't think anything was wrong with it because that's the way I lived. And so I had to make a conscious decision. Okay, Trina, this is not right. You know, I'm not just affected.
What do you think made the difference for you the second time?
The reality check was I had to really want something for myself. Someone was out there to help me, which was the MOMS program. Somebody gave their hand to me and said, you know, I'm going to help you and your children. And I wasn't used to that, so I didn't know how to appreciate that. So I got comfortable in the lifestyle that I was living, and I lived that lifestyle thinking it was okay. You know, I didn't think anything was wrong with it because that's the way I lived. And so I had to make a conscious decision. Okay, Trina, this is not right. You know, I'm not just affecting myself. I'm affecting my children and people around me. So, you know, that's what changed me. Mm-hmm. You know, just being honest with myself.
The vulnerability of some of the stories you'll hear today, and we're hearing just snippets of several hours worth of video, is that even though there were access to repeat offender programs, the fact that this came together cohesively with the partners noted on the slide. Initially, it was BOSS, Building Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency, Second Chances, Eden INR, and the Hoakland Housing Authority. Since that time, partners have come and partners have left, and we've developed a very strong bond with Center Force to provide supportive services. One of the impacts, though, is that until an individual, like all of us, is ready to take that step and courage and jump in and make a decision for themselves, the repeat comes in. The program built by Center Force in terms of the 8 weeks of case management pre-release and then 18 months of on-site care while living in our units, post-release in custody, and then after transitioning on to another housing authority unit in that AMP, they continue to participate in case management and in a lot of cases become leaders in other venues, including as alumni for the program for current women involved in the program. When you look at the organizational chart, you'll note that, again, the Sheriff's Department is the hero that started this and leads it, and they have a very significant partnership built into how they manage several hundred women a year in program services. Under leadership, there's two policy-making aspects to the MOMS program. One is the steering committee, and you'll note the participants there, and the other is the advisory board. The housing authority is an ad hoc, if you will, member of the advisory board. And in fact, the executive director and I will be attending the meeting kind of on an annual basis for the first time, actually, in June. We haven't been in 2 years, and so we'll be participating in that. And that's to discuss funding and the challenges with funding, which is much the discussion that's happening in Washington, D.C., how we continue to leverage resources and how we potentially can look to grow the program, either for more mothers reuniting with their children or with dads trying to reunite with their families. The methodology for case management and services begins with this organizational chart, flow chart, if you will. And one of the things the sheriff says that services begin on the day of arrest. It's at that point that the sheriff's department, and very soon after going through the process into be in custody in Santa Rita, Center for us to try to make an impact at the point of arrest. And what that process means to women is illustrated in slide number one.
Beautiful video. Program, and it deserves to be funded, and it deserves to be, to me, nationwide, to be honest. It should not be easy for anyone to get into. It should be hard work involved in getting in here. The same way I work to get in here.
One of the things that's been highlighted in interviewing with the women is the appreciation for the amount of work it takes to change habits, change your life, and become a strong mom for your children. And every one of the women that I've had the honor of working with are not just champions and victorious, but these are soldiers in making sure that their families thrive. Each of them have their own individual plan of action for their case management, and what that means and what that can include is illustrated in our video on slide five.
After I got out, I got into a 6 month residential in Martinez, and I graduated.
Okay.
And just graduated an 8 month outpatient program.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And stayed in a shelter for a month, and I got my place here.
That was Moni speaking to us, and if you listen, Moni was involved in two additional programs after release from custody in the 8 weeks there, amounting to 14 weeks of programming before getting approved and placed in our on-site program. So again, it's leveraging multiple resources and multiple steps for the process. The very charming young man in the picture there, which Moms uses for advertisement, is her little baby Alex, who basically made sure he was in most of the videotapes that we taped on that particular day. The curriculum was developed. It's by Dr. Dennis Johnson, basically at the Center for Children of Incarcerated Parents, and Dr. Stephanie Covington. It's very similar to a 12-step, but adds other components, and it's gender-specific because when you look at the studies of the needs for folks that have been in custody, male and female, those with children and without children, the needs are very different. And so the MOMS program that Center for Us manages is very specified to the needs of women with children. There are 17 sessions with 4 modules, and it addresses the areas that are the most hurtful for ladies: substance abuse, triggers for relapse, the sense of self with this huge, relationships, sexuality, and spirituality. The curriculum is intense, and relapse, though, can still happen, as illustrated by our speaker. Let's see if that one will pop up for us.
The following year, I relapsed in my behavior, meaning going and doing the criminal behaviors. And that was the following December. They worked with me. You know, I was terminated from the program. I went back in custody. Mm-hmm. When I got out, I made a conscious decision to do something different with my life. Missy worked with me the whole time. And once I got out, I went to college, taking up social science for 3 semesters. I worked hard. They didn't want to let me back in the program, but I worked so hard to get back here. It took me almost 2 years to get back. Mm-hmm. They wanted to see the change in me, and I did it.
Our MOMS program is not a 90-day program. It's a multi-year program, a lifetime change. One of the things that we celebrated on the day that we saw them last with New York City was that young lady not just had gotten a promotion, but had been invited to a board meeting where she was, and I quote, around the table with a bunch of rich men, and they're going to teach me how to be rich. So the process of understanding self and understanding what it takes to be victorious is something that each of these ladies hold a badge of honor for. So let's talk about the unit. 1619 Seminary Avenue, it's 11 furnished units. Yes, the Housing Authority actually has furnished units only at this property. It's living room, bedroom sets, as well as the kitchen set that we've been providing in the last 5 years. One of the units, 3-bedroom, has been turned into an on-site office that also one of the bedrooms is community space. The ladies receive classes there from other third parties. We actually had, I believe, St. Mary's do some programming during this past winter season. If you look at this site, and I think most of the commission has had an opportunity to be there, it's set back off the street, so we're not facing the density, and it's almost utopian when you walk down and you go into where the apartment units are, and each of them has their own backyard, and it's a very green space. Our cost for furnishing the unit is roughly to furnish and renovate. And these were renovated 12 years ago under capital funds, so they don't necessarily have the marble, but it is some of our very nice oak cabinets and improved. We do have marble cabinets. You didn't notice that Palo Vista? Oh, slipped that one by you. Granite, thank you. Thank you. Marble, you know. I was shopping last night. Sorry, got it confused. But the granite countertops. The cost to furnish the unit and rehab it is roughly about $15,000 combined, but that $15,000, again, goes into, and I can't keep letting you know, the fact that we're serving children and moms for making lifetime changes. And that's shared as how important it is by our speaker on the blue.
Right, so they accepted me to come here. And what happened, my experience for that was that a lot of stress and a load was uplifted off me to where financially, mm-hmm. you know, financially. And it gave me more, you know, even though I still work and my hours are cut, mm-hmm. it makes things easier for me to be a mother to my children. You know, because being responsible today and working and paying your bills and being a mother, being a friend, being a coworker, I get to be all these good, positive things being in society. Being a, when it comes to being a mother, that's where the stress kicks in.
One of the things that's high on the list for needs for the moms is access to jobs, making sure that they get the support they need to get great education for their children, most of who are in primary school age, and activities for the teens. In addition to some of the challenges that come with being a part of the program, not just do they have to get screened in custody, going through the Sheriff's Department curriculum, but they also have to go through our own eligibility. And we have had to deny access for certain women because of the type of issues for which they were incarcerated. So it is a very, very strict screening process. In terms of the evolution of our components on the next slide, one of the things we've done in the last 2 years is enhance the lease so that compliance with the MOMS program itself is actually a requirement of the lease for new enrollees. Violation of that could end up with an unlawful detainer. It moved from public housing to project-based Section 8, which of course added subsidy to the site, which has allowed us to furnish them and then make sure that we have access to additional programs for the MOMS. And we are working toward enhancing our contact as a housing authority with those ladies who are enrolled to apply for the housing component so that they know what documents to acquire while they're in custody, birth certificates, new social security cards, and the things that are necessary for being self-sufficient once they become one of our clients. Our systemic challenges on the next slide. One more. Quite honestly, again, when I noted on the map the proximity of the MOMS location to a very densely part of central, ergo East Oakland, is the fact that on that block it's right next to a store that sells alcohol and does have folks that hangs out in the front. The dense community does have police officer stops quite frequently in the neighborhood, and that's something that the MOMS have worked around by building their own social asset and family. Can we try that one, please? Proximity.
The neighborhood, it's not so great, but as long as we stick together here in the MOMS program, we're getting through it. You know, we keep our kids secure here. We have a yard. We call each other. We stay in contact with each other. We keep our eyes open. Whatever goes on, we let the case managers know, the sergeant know.
So again, social assets, they become a family within the community, which arguably we're working to include at all of our OP sites, so that that is the same concept by which all of our families can participate in. One of the other things that's a challenge is the fact that, again, the journey of leaving custody and having to go through the education and mindset changes is one that can reap actually surprising results.
Right when I graduated from the program, of the treatment program, I was able to start looking for a job, and my first job that I applied for, they pulled me in.
Wow.
With all honesty, have you ever been convicted of a felony? Yes. Did I hate to put that? Yes. You know what I'm saying? Because I always like to go the easy way out. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So being honest and having to face my boss and explain that, you know, the way that I used to live and how I live today, he still hired me and I still have that job.
She actually said, I think her third year of employment, and she was the one that went across country to talk about her 12-step program that she helps to lead, and I think she started it herself. The other thing I want to point out, that funding has been critical for our program. There have been some lean years for the Sheriff's Department, and in those lean years, the Housing Authority filled the gap with our own resident services and children's services. We've had those kids attend our camps and that kind of thing. And then lastly, what are the critical success factors for replicating this type of program? Funding, and more funding. A strong interagency partnership where there are like ties and there's interest in being flexible. A heart for the women, both from the staff as well as the policymakers, to make sure that the program thrives. And making sure that we're screening applicants and then providing them services for this success jointly with the Sheriff's Department. And I think whether we hear it visually or just the audio, the last statement here is what brings in the key of our partnership.
Laura used to tell me, honey, if you can't look at your own self with your own eyes, and this just puts tears in my eyes because I didn't think I could ever make it. I never knew I had a purpose, right? Mm-hmm. And she told me, she said, I want you to look at yourself through my eyes. You know, and I looked at her, and I never heard that before. And I did, and I did. And that's when I just stood up, and I was like, okay, I'm done with this type of lifestyle. I'm going to do that, Laura. I'm going to do that. And I did.
So how does our partnership see these women? Through the eyes of the Alameda County Sheriff's Department, the Oakland Housing Authority, and Center Force. These are champions. And with that, I'd like to introduce Ms. Vernita Green and our MOMS participants to give any statements.
Hi, I'm Vernita Green. I'm one of the case managers that's part of the MOMS program. And I would just like to say that thank you for having us here tonight and bringing the tenants that are part of the program and started off with the program from incarceration and to where they're at now. The program is a really important program to me. Our staff, our tenants, the women that we work with, the Sheriff Department, Center Force, and I think the biggest piece of the program and the most important piece of the program is the case management piece. Because we start working with the women while they're incarcerated, whatever how long time they are there, and then when they get released, we work with them and help them with resources and whatever it is that they want to do and need to do to for them and their children. So I think with the support of the case management, they're with them all the way from the time they come incarcerated to the time they get out and so forth. I think that support is the biggest piece of the program to keep these women on track and to help them and help them and help them help their children. So I would like to introduce Mary Lou, who is one of our graduates who will be moving on next month, right? Next month she'll be completing our program at the Moms Complex and moving forward. And I just want her to say a few words.
Hi. I just want to tell you guys that the MOMS program is fantastic. It allowed me to change my life. It helped me change my life. It helped me create that bond with my children and family, and prepare myself to be out there and be successful. When I never thought nobody believed in me, they let me know that there's always going to be somebody out there that will believe in you, you know. And they gave me a lot of courage and helped me walk my steps. And I just want to say it's awesome. It's awesome. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Deborah Moore. I am very grateful for the program. I don't know what I would do without it. Because when I was released, I was always used to having my own, like I've had my own place since I was 17. always had a job, since I was 16. And then I went down the road of like my criminal activity. So I was convicted of my crime on a first offense. And if it wasn't for this program, I could have gone back to jail again. But because of this program, I'm doing well. I'm staying in school. And I'm just grateful for me and my daughter. And that's my daughter. She's 8 years old. And thank you.
So thank you again to Mary Lou and Vernita. I have to tell you that in the interviews, your name comes up all the time as somebody that just loves everybody up and takes care of them. With that, are there any questions from the commission?
I want to make a comment to the little young 8-year-old girl. I want you to know that staff gave up one of their toys for you. Because they brought that home for themselves from a conference. So be grateful, okay? And we appreciate what you guys are doing and that you're making yourselves successful. And we'd like to see you help encourage more people and do your best to come back and give back, even if you need the housing authority's help, okay? Anybody else want to say something? Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we do have a question. Ms. Castillo wants to ask a question.
I was just curious if your graduates come back to the house after they're gone just to perhaps encourage other mothers or do some good work, give back a little bit.
Yes, after they complete the program, or any mothers that were a part of the program incarcerated, are always welcome to come back and to our alumni. So we have alumni once a month for all the women who's been a part of the program. It doesn't matter how long it's been. They're welcome to come to the alumni and talk about what they're doing or give out some support or resources that help them along the way. So, yeah, so we always allow women to come back and attend our alumni.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we can go to item D.
Item D is authorization to purchase 60 computers for the leased housing department from Dell Computers. This is to issue a PO to purchase computers needed for the upgrade of the paperless system that are no longer functioning because they're too old. It's a routine item, and I recommend approval.
I'll second the computers.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
One question.
Ms. Castillo.
Unbelievable, but I do have a question on this. Do we recycle our computers, and who do we give them to? And
I'll call Craig McBurney up. We have some HUD regulations we do, and I'm not sure how he gets around doing that, so he'll let you know how he handles it. To recycling.
He meant through.
Craig McBurney, the IT director. We make sure that we work with CCGS, and all electronics waste is given to an authorized, licensed waste management company that disposes of it properly.
Okay.
After we make sure everything usable has been taken out.
Okay.
Mm.
After you make sure everything usable?
Yeah, there's parts in there.
We try
to use things as best we can so we can stretch out the investment.
Wonderful. Good answer. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none, it's unanimously carried. Item E.
Item E, another item that's routine. This is our annual liability insurance policy. It's a consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to renew the general commercial liability insurance policy with the Housing Authority Risk Retention Group and for the period of June 1st, 2012 to May 31st, 2013, and make the payment annual premium in amount of $215,063. It's getting late.
Yes.
This is a routine purchase. The one thing I wanted to point out is it represents a $30,000 decrease from last year's because of reduction in claims, and I'm really happy to risk management, Artesia Dupree's here, along with Flo Lewis for handling that and getting this here on time. That concludes our report, but we're here for any questions.
So we're less risky?
Yes.
Move the item.
It's been moved. In 3 seconds. pick one. Yes.
Just one?
Oh.
Okay.
Any one of those three. Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Any abstentions? It's unanimous. Item F.
Item F has been heard.
Oh, I'm sorry. Artesia, did you really want to say something?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Good night. I know, exactly. Yes. Impeach the
new official OAJ. Just for the record, I didn't get the memo, apparently, this morning. I would have worn a tie, and I have a tie.
I could have been right in there.
All right.
Selective group.
Our time mate.
They're requesting a memo next time, please. Item F. Oh, we did that.
Yeah.
We recognize people. Written communications.
Written communications. There are some items in your packet and a couple I left on your desk. The first one is just a letter about certifying the cost and the acceptance by HUD of the closeout of the ARRA grant. And I just included that so it would be on part of the permanent record, mostly. Cypress Mandela Construction Training Program, we're doing some recruiting for that, so please share. There's a flyer in here if you need more. Contact Nicole. Also, Palavas, the Summer Nutrition Program, Asset Management, just wanted you to be aware of what Bay Area Community Services does out there if you didn't, now that we've got it released and is going on. The next letter is just a reminder, which we'll remind you when we get closer, but on September 7th, one of our partners, Christian Church Homes, will be celebrating one of their annual anniversaries. I think it's their 71st? It's something. Anyway, that's so you can put it on your calendar. There's a report from the Resident Advisory Board for this month, and also a report from Ibalsi, their services they're providing at Lion Creek Crossing, which I like to include. And then the calendars at the end and the conferences. I included the year-end, what basically is the year-end travel for the commissioners, the roll-up for the year. We came in under budget. I'm happy to report that we're about $39,000 for the year as opposed to the $50,000 that we usually do. So we have actually pulled back on that, and I think that's a good message for everyone as well. And the other thing I just left on your chair, one is operating reserves offset litigation. Some people are on the NARO website may have got, who are registered with NARO may have gotten an email about this, or maybe it just came to me. NARO, FADA, and some others have, and their board of directors, are filing a lawsuit against HUD related to the reserve offset. I don't at this point recommend we be a party to that. And I just wanted everyone to have this in case there was a question about it. If that changes, you'll be the first to know.
Yeah, I don't think it's our benefit to do that.
Yeah. At this point, it isn't, and I don't know that it's going to accomplish anything, really. But I wish them well if they're right, and we'll let them decide that. And I think that's everything in my written comments. And I will just have a couple other announcements I'd like to make. One is we have learned that the Housing Authority Insurance Group has awarded two of our residents $2,500 scholarships. Wow. They went to Remy Lacey and Hawen Ling Tam. And I don't remember winning two in the past in the same year, but I am very grateful to them. I told them they made my day yesterday, and I just wanted to congratulate. Those are some of the people we gave the Kindles to. So it did pay off.
Staff is very sad.
I don't think they know. I don't understand it. Yeah. Well, they had to prepare quite a packet, and it allowed them then to duplicate it and send it all over, which is what Letitia's nodding about. Because once you've done it once, it gets real easy to repeat it for a bunch of places. We also have been informed by NARO as of this afternoon that we have won several awards. We've won 4 awards of merit for sponsor-based housing program, family and community partnerships, OUSD partnership data sharing, OHAPD's cadet program, and the resident Our Voice.
Very
won
good.
Won an award as well. And I'm particularly happy to announce that we are in the nomination for an award of excellence for the Palo Vista Restoration Aura Project. The last reminder is that we have our agency annual meeting on June 7th, on June 20th, the next meeting in June, I think it's the 26th, I had it written down and it's not on my post-it, is the annual meeting. The annual meeting occurs at 7 p.m. per the bylaws. I also included an informational memo just about the elections and what the officers do, so everyone will have that, so you should have that on your table.
Wonderful.
As well. And that's it.
Agency.
Something else needs to be brought for at Pacific Southwest region of NARO. They mentioned that at the annual awards meeting reception that nobody applied for awards. So they gave out no awards.
For the regional?
Yes.
Then they probably messed up notifying us that we needed to apply. Because I sure don't remember getting it, and I don't think anybody else did either. They need to go look themselves in the mirror and say, how did they get the word out?
Actually, asked that question.
I want to retract that comment and say, we'll look into that at the chair's request and make sure that we can correct that.
Actually, I think what they mentioned is that the application was put into the program that, you know, that was sent out. And it shouldn't have been in, you know, some people said, well, we didn't see it, and they were saying, well, no, we put it into the program that we sent out.
I will make a suggestion to the president of Pacific Southwest NARO that she does her email list like she does everything else to make sure we're aware of it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's all I wanted to add. Any reports from commission committees? Budget committee, you did a great job once again. You want to add anything? No? Anybody else?
No, because it kind of, we did it tonight.
Well, you might want to thank the rest of the people.
I think that, no, what I thought was really fabulous is that every year the budget process has gotten better and better. It's gotten smoother. And the quality of information, I mean, everything about it has improved. And this is really an important thing, to be able to look, to be able to track year over year, and you see that it is a relentless improvement. But I have to say that I think this year is really, I mean, this was really a big, really a big leap forward. I mean, this was a really fine job, very professional, very, very well done. So I want to thank everybody, and there were a lot of people involved in this. So, yes, I mean, we're all coming. I mean, look, we're all of the commentary and stress over finances has been going down, you know, and things have been, meetings have been going quicker. This is a really wonderful thing. So I want to applaud everyone for that great effort.
Yeah. Yes. Wonderful.
Indeed.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes, right.
Give them their credit where credit is due. Okay. Any announcements by commissioners or any other committees want to report?
The educational health and NARO.
Yeah. Education committee. I really want to thank all of you out there. At this month's meeting, we got a lot of great updates. And Leticia, thank you. Janet, thank you. Director Thompson, thank you. Ms. Eisen, thank you. And the one thing I so appreciated were the parent ambassadors. I was moved by their stories of what they're doing in the community, in the schools, and helping families. One of the ones that really touched me was Vashti Means, OHA Section 8 resident, and she has started Harry Treasures helping us sexually exploited girls. And just think, these are our residents doing this. Brandy Smith, another OHA resident, created the Community Cafe, and that's going to be launched on May the 31st. Go, Brandy. Deborah Weinsanger, Another OHA resident is championing the cause of individual education plans, known as the IEP. And I am really appreciative that we are doing this in great numbers. Now, I know the executive director indicated that our partnership with OUSD has been approved, and hopefully we'll be attending the meeting in June, okay? I understand that Tony Smith will be at that meeting in June and giving a report. Yeah, I think I heard that.
That he, that's the meeting he would like members, yeah, if they're going to attend, to attend. That. Yeah.
Okay. And our next meeting is June 27th, but hey, we are making headway, and thank you to staff for allowing that to happen. Thank you.
Wonderful. Great. Ms. Castillo.
I just wanted to comment on how appreciative I was to be sent to Monterey and to learn and be exposed to the language and the workings of our regional NARO system. I really took a lot away from the panels that I sat on and the workshops. Me and Anna, if she's still here, we're like, hey, you went to this one too. And it was like back to back to back, but very enjoyable. The last couple of sessions that I had were surrounding homelessness and what some of our housing authorities are actually going just over the top ways to kind of address the epidemic of homelessness we have in our community. So that was really heartwarming to hear because of the work that I do. But that homelessness is not sexy to a lot of us, and it's not really brought up at many of the tables in the government. And so it was really good to hear us say it. And so I was really proud of the housing authorities. Learned a lot. Thank you. Thank you, Director.
Good. I want to encourage our commissioners who haven't attended conference to please attend easily the next upcoming conference. Okay. It's a wonderful thing to have a conference in your backyard. It's going to be in San Francisco. Okay. So if you get a chance and you want to volunteer, they need volunteers. Okay. We'll probably be asked to help more than San Francisco will be helping, but because we've been involved, okay.
San Francisco, I'm sure, is doing lots of good work to keep the conference there, and we're looking forward to them booking a conference in Oakland and booking hotels in Oakland sometime, yes, in the future.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. That's what we have to encourage them to do. It'll be cheaper, and they can still go to San Francisco.
We have better restaurants, just for the record.
Okay.
Yeah, we do. We do. And we got better weather.
Can I move to a
cooler restaurant?
We can have this discussion for a long time. I don't think we want to get on this track. We do, actually. I agree with that. I agree with that. But hopefully on, and we have a list of our upcoming conferences here. July 29 through 31, okay, San Francisco, please be there. We're working the national or the state, even the regional committee for NARO commissioners. We had one of the most significant amount of commissioners attend this conference as we had before, a whopping 24. Commissioners don't attend like they should, and we have normally 5 to 7 commissioners for every executive director. We have to like help other people recognize that the conferences offer something that they can appreciate, and what we're trying to make sure that happens is they get training. Usually at the national conferences we have ethics training and fundamentals for commissioners. And those are two courses that allow you, once you take them, to become a certified commissioner. I want to say you're certifiable when you complete it, but you have to like request the certificate, I mean, to become certified before they grant it to you. But once you take those two courses, you're certifiable, so you want to get those in while we're in San Francisco because it's cheaper for you here, okay? Usually it's at the beginning or at the end of the conference, a day or two before. So think about that, and With that, I got to, oh, the other conference is coming up. We start better start looking at. We got a lot of conferences in September. It's ridiculous. Our Black Caucus, Hispanic Caucus, and NARSA, one of the agencies that we've voted to support, are having their conferences. And Pacific Southwest is having their other one in Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm not sure how many people want to go there in July. I mean, in August. When is that? I'm sorry. September. September, Scottsdale, Arizona. But if you feel like you need heat, it's the place to be in September. Okay. Yeah. See that? That's in our packet. Okay. Having said that, any other comments, questions? Hearing none, motions?
Motion.
Adjourned.
There you go.
Second.
Everybody's moving and seconded. All those in the favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Figured you can do that in unison. It's moved and seconded. It's unanimous. We're adjourned to closed session.
Oh,
we got closed session?
Yes. Report on negotiations.